high desert in the great American Southwest.
I bid you good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones, all covered most reliably by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. It's my honor and privilege to be with you throughout the weekend. The big news is in Florida, of course. I don't know how many of you have been watching on CNN and the Weather Channel, but it's cool coverage. It's actually really neat coverage, and it's worth watching right now. The eye wall has passed over land, and the eye is now just about almost halfway over land in this very slow moving hurricane. Now, massive Hurricane Francis trudged, that's the word the AP uses, trudged toward land with 105-mile-an-hour winds. They've measured more than that, by the way. And pelting rain late Saturday, knocking out power to 2 million people and forcing Floridians to endure a frightening night amid roaring gales that shredded roofs and uprooted trees, transformers popping like corn, sending sparks into the dark skies as families huddled in shelters, I'm sure with radios, some of them in bathrooms, hotel lobbies. It's just incredible what's going on. I've watched now for days. I've been watching the Weather Channel. They really do good coverage of incoming, and it's been spectacular. Anyway, what I'm hoping to do is I'm going to reserve two telephone lines and see if we can get anybody in the area. Now, they're the two most logical lines. And here they are. I'm looking for people in the Palm Beach area, you know, in the Palms, in that area. And Fort Pierce appears to be taking the brunt of it right now, 100-mile-an-hour winds. The problem with this hurricane, of course, it reduced itself down to Cat 2, but it just virtually stopped right at the coast. It stopped! And, of course, the worst thing you can have happen is a hurricane half on land and half in the ocean. That means it continually gets fed by the warm waters, and the energy is then, and the water, dumped on the land. And it's just a continuing process. Once it gets completely on land, it's going to lose a little bit of strength. But right now, it's wailing on Florida. And so it's worth a try. Now, I may not get any calls because all the communications in the area may either be knocked out or non-functioning. We may be on in Miami. If we are, then that means that we've got people with transistor radios in the Palms and up in Fort Pierce and the area affected right now that would be able to get through. But if you're in an area and you've got a cell phone and you can get through to me, I would love to hear from you. So let's reserve two lines. The first time caller line, which is area code 702 727-1222. That's a first-time caller line here. 702-727-1222. Or our toll-free east of the Rockies line, which is 1-800-825-5033. I'll give that again. East of the Rockies, which Florida most assuredly is, 1-800-825-5033. And we would obviously love to hear from you if you're able to get through from those areas. Now, my understanding is some cell phone coverage is continuing, and perhaps some telephones are on, or if I can't get to those areas, then maybe the areas adjacent. At any rate, I would love to hear from you. I'm not asking anybody like the CNN people or the Weather Channel people who bravely go out and stand in crazy places, like right down at the ocean, under palm trees, in some cases out in the open. I saw the CNN anchors finally move out of the open. They said, this is getting too dangerous. You know, pieces of a roof were going by. And so they finally shifted to a slightly safer location. But I'm a weather bug. You know, I always have been. I used to chase tornadoes. So we've been watching religiously the Weather Channel over the last few days. There are tornado warnings out for Florida. For that portion of Florida, mostly Palm and to the north, where the rain bands are coming in, and that's where the tornado warnings, indeed, they think they've had several, perhaps already. Anyway, my admiration goes out. I used to joke, you know, and wonder who are the ones who get to go right down to the area where the eye wall is going to pass right over lead. I used to joke about that, but I really don't. I'm not going to indulge that tonight, although you have to wonder. I noticed Anderson Cooper, he's right. They've got him right down at Fort. Anderson was at Fort Pierce, standing there, sort of, with pieces of a roof going by. It looked pretty bad. So the torturous part of this hurricane, being Cat 2, is not that bad. It's bad, but not that bad. Nevertheless, if you're, you know, kind of huddled somewhere right now, it's terrible. I mean, it's frightening, and you have every right to be frightened. 2.8, can you imagine this? 2.8 million people have been evacuated in Florida. 2.8 million people, my God, that's a lot of people, out of their homes. 73,000, it is now estimated, in shelters. And so, what a Labor Day weekend it is for them. And one thing I'm sure they don't want to know is there's another hurricane on the way, or potentially on the way. Out of Africa she came, and she's probably going to take just about exactly the same path, probably the last thing in the world you all want to hear about out there. Did you know that hurricane names are used again and again until you get a super hurricane or one that really impacts land, does a lot of damage, and then the name, like the baseball jersey number of a baseball player or a football player, they get retired. So I think France is well on the way to retirement already, never to be used again and always to be remembered. So once again, let me give you two telephone numbers as we go into break here. And if we can hear from those of you in the actual areas affected, the Palm areas, maybe Fort Pierce and along the coast in that area. Here they are. First time caller line, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the east of the Rockies line at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. We'll try and take you there in a moment. All right, once again, Florida on those lines and Florida only. So everybody, please cooperate out there. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, first-time caller and second-time survivor, hopefully.
Second-time survivor. Where are you?
In Lakeland, Florida.
Lakeland, Florida.
Yeah.
And what's happening in Lakeland? And where is that with respect to the Palms, for example?
Actually, it's in pretty much right in the middle of Florida between Orlando and Tampa. But all of the feeder bands are coming in now. And we were just hit, you know, like 3 weeks ago.
I know.
And it's the same, we're getting hit from the opposite direction now, you know, and it's like a double hit.
Yeah. How are your winds at the moment?
Gusts about 65.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's honking.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary, and especially scary at night, isn't it?
Yeah, it always has to happen at night, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like you don't want to go to sleep because you want to keep an eye on the trees.
Yeah, of course not. So are you going to stay awake until it starts calming down a little bit, or what are your plans?
Short sleep, probably intervals, listening to you and then watching the local news.
Yeah, are they doing a pretty good job? Were you evacuated there, or?
Well, we have for mobile homes, we have, you know, it's not mandatory, but, you know, if you're in a mobile home, you should get out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've seen some of the, you know, the video from the mobile home parks, even earlier today before the sun went down in Florida, and they were getting ripped up.
Right. Yeah, just the last one, Charlie, we were like, if Charlie was 20 miles to the west, we would have been destroyed, you know? I mean, you see the devastation from what it did with all the trailer parks and stuff.
Absolutely.
It knocked down a water tower, you know?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's some wind.
Yeah, that's some wind. Well, I wish you luck in this one, and I hate to break it to you, but there's another one out there in the Atlantic beginning to turn. Oh, yeah, right now, already. Sheesh.
And it's like taking the same path, so this is going to be a weekly event.
Weekly every other week. For a while, yeah. All right, thank you very much for the call. Take care. All right. We're going to be exploring on the phone lines, and again, let me emphasize this one more time. These two telephone lines I wish to reserve exclusively for Florida, area code 702-727-1222, or the East of the Rockies line, only Florida, at 1-800-825-5033. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going once. Are you there? Going twice. Gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
I'm calling from Huntsville, Alabama, and I'm having a problem here. I call the numbers that they give on the radio all night, and I get foreign people calling, and they want my credit card number, and they want all kind of information from me.
Well, what?
And
Wait, why are they calling you?
Pardon me?
Why are they calling you?
I was calling the numbers on the that were given on the air.
The coast to coast numbers.
By George, yeah.
Yes.
The 8872755505 and the help number, and both of them have. It sounds like Oriental people.
Okay, well it's 5033, so you have the number wrong. 1-800-825-5033, and that's the number you just finally did get through to. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, I'm calling for my family who is in Florida.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, sir, but we're only taking calls from Florida on these numbers. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Yeah, this is Florida calling.
Where in Florida are you?
I'm in Punta Gorda, the one that got hit by the last hurricane, directly across from where this one's going to hit.
Yes, I'm quite aware of where you are, and I know that you really got clobbered in the last one.
I was out of power for like 8 days, and now this one's coming. I know they got another one, they say, coming. I've been watching the Weather Channel religiously, just like you, too. So
right. I know that it's on the East Coast, but this damn thing is the size of Texas.
I know it.
And so it's going to get to you before it's even done with the East Coast.
It reminds me of Bertha. I've been surfing for about 15 years, so I'm kind of an amateur weatherman, you know, and I got to say, it's good to talk to you too, Art. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Well, I'm glad to have you, and I wish you luck. Have any of the feeder bands begun to reach?
I just walked outside just a couple of minutes ago, and my door on the inside, I'm in a stilt house. So this stilt house took 140 mile an hour winds and stood, so I'm not really worried too much about this one, but it's moving so slow, we're just going to get flooded, you know. And the people over there in trailer parks, I feel sorry for them.
I do, too. Thank you very much for the call. All right, let's put a Gorda where they got clobbered. That was ground zero for the last one. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing today?
Okay, are you in Florida?
Fort Myers, Florida.
Fort Myers, huh?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, all right. So what's up right now in Fort Myers?
Well, pretty much wind gusts are a little bit up. I was also noticing how you were talking about how retired hurricanes. I actually was in Andrew not once, but even twice.
Yeah, they retire their names, I guess, like baseball players and football players who are stars, and they don't ever use them again.
Yeah, pretty much the main reason why they do that, I come to find out we did reports and everything in high school about major hurricanes that hit. Hugo being one of them, Opal is also another. Mainly the reason why they do it is because of the severity of the storm itself. They don't want to use the name again, mainly, you know, bad memories, I guess. I don't know exactly what the reasoning is, but I do know if it's a severe enough hurricane, this one that's hitting now, Francis, I don't believe will be retired, but I do know.
Oh, I'm betting it is.
It might.
Not because of how severe it was when it hit land, but because of how godforsakenly slow it's moving.
It's moving, yeah. It's unreal. I've never seen something like this. Like I said, I've been a long-time Florida resident. Craziness, Andrew, it hit me twice. I was in Fort Myers, Florida. It came through the whole south part of Florida. We got hit by him. about 150 to 180 mile wind gust. It was horrible. And then not even 2 days later, I go up to Fort Walton Beach, Florida, back where my mother lived, to visit her. And sure enough, it comes right in the northwest panhandle, hits us again. So, hurricanes don't have too much of luck. Also, I was in Fort Myers during Hurricane Charlie just not even two and a half weeks ago. One thing a lot of people don't realize is that it gets crazy during those times. People, I guess, lose all sense of reality. They had looting going on in downtown Fort Myers. They had to, believe it or not, bring in the National Guard to direct traffic with M16s. I mean, people, I guess, just lose their mind out
that
there.
That alone is a sight to see. I've been in a number of South American countries and some Asian countries where, you know, people with submachine guns walking around are a common sight. But they're not a common sight on the average American main street. That's for damn sure. And when you see them, it definitely gets your attention. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. Okay, well, I guess not. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hello.
Hey, this is Dave. I'm calling from Dade City, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Right now we're getting a lot of high winds. We're on the East Coast, basically, about 30 miles north of Tampa.
Oh.
And we're feeling a lot of squalls and bad storms out here. I can only imagine what they're getting over there.
It's going to get a lot worse there before it gets better.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not really a whole lot of coverage on it. As big as this thing is.
Oh, there certainly is on the Weather Channel and CNN. They're in just about constant coverage. And from what I could see, CNN has their people in the more perilous places at the moment, if I were to judge.
Yeah, also, I think it was George, maybe, who had Sylvia Brown on a month or so back.
Yes.
She had a prediction about Florida being hammered by hurricanes one after another for like the next 10 years, I think she said.
10 years?
Yeah.
I was worried about the next couple of weeks, but 10 years?
Yeah, one right after another, horrible hurricane season. So basically, Florida's incapacitated to like a big wasteland.
Well, her prediction is off to a really good start then, isn't it? Because that's certainly what's occurred this year so far. And again, there is yet another hurricane out of Africa, I should say, out of Africa right now, and headed across the Atlantic on a course that mimics the one you just saw Francis take, or is taking right now. But this business of marching right up to land and then stopping, boom, right there, and being sort of half on and half off, and it just does incredible damage. Even though it's a Category 2, it's like a tornado that stays over one spot and just digs a hole in the ground. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
All right, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Fort Myers right now, actually driving in my car.
You're driving?
Yeah, I'm actually driving, yes.
Are you supposed to be doing that? I thought they had a curfew.
Well, I'll tell you what, I am a fellow broadcaster here in town, and first of all, I got to just tell you how much I respect you. You just do a fantastic job. But
thank you.
I'm actually driving back from my job, and right now I will tell you, it's been very eerie today because earlier in the day, the sun was out, there was some clouds, there wasn't a lot of breeze, it wasn't so bad. The thing about this storm that's so different from everything else that's been happening, Charlie, is the fact that today, everything was so calm. Right now, everybody in town has just been saying how nobody knows what's going on because it's lingering for so long.
Yes.
We don't know what's happening.
Yes, I know. And then it gets late at night, it gets dark, and it really gets scary. If you're sitting at home alone, it's scary.
And right now, it's the winds are starting to pick up,
yep.
The rain's starting to come in. You get those, in Florida, low clouds. You get very low clouds that move fast. You get the higher clouds that sit up, and you can see the low clouds moving, the ones that are sort of the bands that come across, and the winds are coming from the north. So you know if the winds are coming from the north, that we're on the west coast of Florida.
That's right.
Then that means where the storm is seems to be above us. So it's just the time that it's taking for this to happen. People are just waiting for something to go on. They're waiting. Charlie came so quick.
Yes, this one's so slow. It's torture.
It is. It's unbelievable. And right now, it's sort of agonizing.
They're
the people
actually,
that I talk to.
You know, they're actually talking about it taking days for the eye to make it from one side to the other.
I could see that this storm could be worse than Charlie in the fact that the rains, if this takes 36 hours, let's say, just to get across the state, the rain that's going to come here, there's no place for this rain to go.
That's
the ground is so saturated, there's nowhere for the water to go. I really don't know what's going
to
happen.
Listen, buddy, I got to go. We're out of time. Thank you very much. We'll continue to take calls from Florida in the second half of this hour.
Now the tiki is.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Here it is, as of 1 a.m., or about 35 minutes ago or so, it was the Hurricane Charlie was at 27.2 north, and 80.2 west near Seawalls Point, Florida. So it's actually coming ashore at that point, Seawalls Point, Florida, with winds of 105 miles an hour, moving west-northwest at 7 miles an hour. Pressure is 2835, an estimated 960 millibars. And this baby is moving slowly. Remember, we're reserving the first-time caller line in east of the Rockies for people in Florida only. Trying to get a taste of what's going on. More of that in a moment. Let's get right back to it if we can. First time caller line, east of the Rockies, reserved for people in the zone of wind and rain, and frankly, Hurricane Francis. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, where are you?
Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm going to listen from 610 WIOD.
I was hoping that WIOD would carry the program for this exact reason, because I know it covers up in that area very well. So we are on the air there. Cool.
Well, actually, tonight I have to listen to another area station online because they're doing all the weather programming.
I thought they might be doing that. All right. All right. All right. So what's up where you are?
Well, we're getting a lot of wind and a lot of rain. I mean, we're just outside of that real bad area. Like, I'm just a little bit south of West Palm Beach.
Right. So you're close.
Yeah, I'm.
You must
close.
Be getting a lot of the rain bands as they come swinging around.
Well, they're saying anywhere between 12:30 and 2 o'clock, and it's almost 2 o'clock now. So we should be getting a real bad one any time now.
Oh, that's when they're predicting the very worst of it is going to occur?
Yeah, from my area, yeah.
Uh-huh. So you're choosing, I take it then, to stay awake through this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a night person anyway. I listen to your show almost every single night.
But you couldn't go, like, crawl into bed and just ignore this, could you?
No way. There's too much noise. There's some, metal framing around the outside of my house, and it's rattling like hell, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't go to sleep during that.
No.
All right.
It's really hard.
All right. Well, listen, I really appreciate that. Do you have power there now, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Power here is fine. And it's weird because we have the above-ground power lines.
Right.
And you would think that they'd go first. And my sister lives about 20 minutes north of where I'm at, and she's got the underground lines.
Right.
And she's lost power since 11 o'clock this morning.
No kidding.
So it's funny.
And not funny at the same time. If you lose power in Florida, you're in a very humid, dark right now and kind of scary environment. I mean, you've got to put yourself, you can only put yourself in the shoes of the people that we're hearing. I mean, this thing is raging around you in the middle of the night. It's going on 2 o'clock in the morning. In Florida, and that's really frightening. It's a frightening situation. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I'm over here by 95, by Palm City over here.
Oh man, you're right in the, the worst place you can be, sir. Where are you?
Yeah, they got the traffic stop now. I had to deliver down here in Rivera Beach, a trailer load of water down there. I guess they needed some water down there. For the shelters over there, but they told me to get out of there, but now they got the whole everything stopped, the wind's blowing. I don't know what's going on.
You're in a truck, you're in an 18-wheeler.
Yeah, I'm pulled over now. You got the whole traffic stuff over here by Highway 609. I'm over here off of 95.
Well, tell me, is there any concern on your part? I mean, you're not broadside to the wind, are you?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of sideways, but everybody else is all over the road, so it's not too bad.
I'm not sure exactly what it would take. I guess if a truck like yours is empty and you're broadside to the wind, I wonder what kind of wind it takes to actually tip over a truck like that.
Oh, yeah. You see them all the time tipped over on 60, 70-mile-an-hour winds. It's blowing pretty good over here now.
Well, it's easily going to get to that or even worse where you are. So are you at all worried about, like, getting tipped over?
Well, I'm going to do my best to get over here to this rest area and put my butt to the wind.
Yeah, put your butt to the wind is right.
Yeah.
Well, so in other words, all traffic now is stopped.
Yeah, all traffic stopped. They got lights going out here. Everybody's running around. They don't know what's going on over here. It's crazy. I guess they said somewhere by some seawall point or something it's coming in, and I got to get north. I got to get going.
Yeah, where are you headed, and where are you coming from, and where are you going?
I delivered down there in Rivera Beach. I'm going up there to Jacksonville now just to get out of here. They told me I could probably make it, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No.
It's going to be a long wait in the night for you, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Well, all right, get yourself then in a safe place behind that truck stop if you can.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Butt to the wind. All right, thank you very much. That would be scary, to be in an 18-wheeler right in the middle of that. And, you know, there are a couple of spots. He was not far from Fort Pierce. A couple of spots there near Fort Pierce where they've measured wind already well over 100 miles an hour on the ground. So, yeah, that'd be really, really frightening. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Where are you, please?
I'm in North Sarasota in Florida.
In Florida. Okay, welcome. How is it where you are?
We're okay here right now. I wanted to grab this up. I was just looking forward to your program this weekend because it's comforting. And I thought, well, Art Bell will be on Saturday night and Sunday night.
It looks that way, yes.
Right. But I wanted to take this opportunity to thank the nation after Charlie. I was one of many volunteers in a farming community called Arcadia, which was just totally devastated by Charlie.
Yes.
And the nation responded with their heart. And we had all kinds of bottled water.
America is a, thank you, very generous place. When people get in trouble, we really do help each other out. And that will occur now as well. But, you know, it is my view that we're going to be facing an increasingly violent weather situation, that we're going to be facing increasing numbers of storms that are going to end up on average being larger storms. But you know my views on the weather. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Well, I'm on my way down to the hurricane.
You're what?
We're on our way. There's a hurricane party in Hope Sound.
You're going to have, you're a hurricane party? In other words, you're actually traveling to the hurricane to have a party?
Yes, sir. I'm also in the punk rock band, and we're going to film a video while the hurricane is going on.
You are, huh?
Yes, sir.
So it's part-time filming, part-time partying?
Yeah, a little bit of both. A little business and pleasure at the same time there.
Yes. There have been stories, you know, of people deciding to party through a hurricane that haven't made out so well.
Yes, I've lost two or three friends over the years. Every year we follow the hurricanes.
You've lost two or three of your fellow partiers?
Yes.
Yes, that's very sad. Some of us do wonder why people would choose to have a party in a hurricane.
Well, it's a
matter of curiosity.
It's basically being face to face with the power of nature, God, all of that.
Well, I guess there is that in human beings. I would not choose. Well, you know, that's really a lie. I would. I really would. I used to chase tornadoes, and so there is, I do understand his insanity. Now, going to have a party in a hurricane, I'm sorry, it is in my mind insanity. However, I share in some of that insanity, not to the degree of partying in a very large, dangerous, potentially even deadly storm. However, I am fascinated by the weather. I always have been. I used to chase tornadoes, and we all know only crazy people really do that, right? Right. So I guess I do. I was prepared to be shocked by what he said, but I guess I'm not really. There's something very attractive about it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Where are you?
I'm in St. Augustine.
St. Augustine. Welcome to the program.
We have sustained winds now here at 45 miles an hour, and by the time I get off, it will probably be up into the 60s.
That's a lot of sustained wind. That's really a lot of sustained wind. And, if something doesn't...
I don't know if you can hear it or not. I'm in a little guard shack here. It's just a little 7x7 shack, and it's...
So that's what you're going to have to do during the hurricane? You're going to have to stand in a little shack?
Well, yes. This is I'm a security officer. And I'm here at a marina, and...
I heard some slamming in the background.
Yeah.
Well, that might not be the best job in the world to have right now, being alone in a little tiny shack in the middle of that.
Well, I've got to come back. This is Sunday now. I've got to come back at 8 o'clock tonight, and it will probably be raining cats and dogs for my shift.
Oh, I would think there's that definite possibility, sir.
Yeah, the reason...
Is your shack going to stay where it is?
It has. I've been through three or four blows with up to 70 and 80 mile an hour winds in this little shack, so...
Uh-huh.
The reason that hurricane stalled, we got a high pressure up over Georgia and another one coming right down behind it, and that's why it stalled, and that's what's forcing it across the state.
Yes. Yes, well, whatever it is, it's absolutely awful for Florida, isn't it? I mean, just to have like a hurricane half on and half off land is...
Well, my wife called me about 11 o'clock and said that the lights, her electricity, our electricity is off, and a friend of hers that works with my daughter, he lives about 3 or 4 or 5 miles this east of where I live, and all the lights are out on that sector now.
Well, I hope that people will be careful, because when the lights go out, thank you, people begin to use, inevitably, candles. This is one of those moments where you ought to have one of those new LED flashlights. But so people start using candles, and then, of course, there is the danger of fire, and fire in the middle of something like this is probably really tragic because, A, of the winds, and, B, of the fact that the fire department people may not be able to get to you in the middle of this mess. So it's an amazing hurricane, absolutely an amazing hurricane. As it was going, the last picture I saw on the Weather Channel showed it cutting a sharp left. Now, I wonder how many of you saw that. In the last track, it looks like the hurricane was moving west-northwest and then suddenly went just straight west. And in she went, I'm told, coming ashore actually right now at New Seawalls Point, Florida. Although I'm also told that the eye of this hurricane's about 70 miles in diameter. 70 miles in diameter. That's one gigantic eye. That means there's going to be a very calm period for some. They should be in that right now, in the eye of the hurricane. Many of you ought to be in the eye of the hurricane. It's going to be a very calm period, and you're going to think, aha, the storm has stopped. But indeed, you're only in the middle of the storm. So be wary of that, east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Donna, and I'm calling from just south of Orlando in Osceola County.
Ah, yes.
Orlando is like a ghost town right now. It's awfully strange here. I'm actually on Disney property, and I live in a little town called Celebration, and it's actually on the edge of Disney property. And we had an imposed curfew here at 2 o'clock, and no one's been able to go anywhere. But the odd thing is that the wind and the rain are not significant at this point. And we've been sort of waiting for this for 2 days.
Yes.
And everyone is, I think, letting their guards down. I'm seeing a lot of people just really not thinking that it's coming at all. And I'm just hearing on the radio that we're the next counties that it's heading toward, Polk and Osceola County.
Well, my wife's brother, Rodney, is in the Orlando area.
Mm-hmm.
So we get regular reports from him, and, of course, the last hurricane didn't treat y'all so well there.
Didn't treat us real nice, no. Wasn't real friendly.
And here comes another one.
And strike three right behind it.
And strike three right behind it.
Right.
Are people in Florida beginning to go, hey, this is, you know, this is not so such good year, is it?
You know, it's so odd because a lot of people are... some of them that lived in a town called Kissimmee, they were hit probably the hardest. The high school there, the roof of the school was peeled back like a sardine can, and the school is basically in ruins right now. They're trying to struggle and figure out what to do with that. The kids have missed a lot of school in there, trying to figure out how to make that up. And yeah, a lot of them we're all kind of walking around like deer caught in someone's headlights right now.
Well, I absolutely appreciate your calling. I thank you for it. And
well, it's been a real pleasure listening to you over the years, too. So keep up the good work and tell George we all said hi.
Okay, you take care and be safe there.
Thanks, Art.
Bye-bye. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Where are you?
I'm in Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, Texas. Well,
yeah.
We were kind of reserving this away for Florida, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. I was wanting to ask you about the ET contact Paul Harvey talked about Thursday.
All right.
Did you hear anything about that?
Oh, yeah. So I certainly have. All right. Very briefly, thank you. Thank you for asking. Yes, of course I've heard about it. And do you recall, I wonder how many of you recall, not very long ago, months ago, I told you that we were copying a signal on 1420, 1.420 megahertz, or 1.42 gigahertz, depending on how you want to think about it. The SETI has, there's a story out that SETI may be receiving a signal on 1420, one that has repeated itself. Now, they don't have it enough to the point yet where they're willing to declare the fact that they are receiving an alien signal of some sort, and they always admit that it could be some other part of their own device or some terrestrial something, but they don't think so. Now, the fact is, they have detected a signal as early as February of 2003 on 1420, and that is the exact place where I heard it and where a number of Canadians reported hearing it. So it's a fascinating situation. Could we be in contact? Are we in contact? Well, I don't know, but maybe. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hi, where are you?
I live in Clearwater, Florida.
Clearwater. All right. How's everything going in Clearwater?
Right. We're waiting for this thing to come across the state. And supposedly, you know, we don't know exactly where it's going to go, but it looks like it's going to hit us directly or right below us or right above us.
Well, again, it's moving so slowly that even if you have winds that are of the 60 or 70 mile an hour variety and they're constant and they go on for a day and a night, a lot of damage gets done.
I was going to ask you, you said you're a weather connoisseur. You like to watch the Weather Channel?
I'm pretty weird with the weather.
Did you know when went from a Category 4 to a Category 2?
Yes.
I was watching the 700 Club, and Sunday morning, or excuse me, Friday morning, this past Friday morning, about 10:55 a.m., Pat was praying that God would do something with this hurricane,
mm-hmm.
either send it out into the ocean
mm-hmm.
or do something with it, right?
Yes.
Well, it went from a Category 4 to a Category 2.
Well, I hope, you know what? I hope that the prayer that he was doing had that effect. And maybe it did. Who am I to say one way or the other? However, all of this can be looked at in many different ways. And, you know, had we done a mass thing with it, which I'm thankful we did not, those would say, well, look, it stopped, and now it's battering the hell out of the East Coast of Florida, and that was an unintended consequence. Or they might say, well, it went from 4 to 2, and that did it. But we didn't do it, and it went from 4 to 2 anyway. Maybe it was Pat. All right. Coming up, we'll switch gears and talk about something else, for which the rest of the country, I'm sure, is thankful. I'm Art Bell. Good morning.
Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. We've been covering the hurricane for the last hour, and a bad one it is, just barely crawling across Florida. Coming up in a moment, remote viewing and a bit of a twist with Stephen Schwartz. Stay right where you are. You all know the big kick I've been on with mass consciousness, and this falls right into that category. Stephen Schwartz, Research Associate of Cognitive Sciences Laboratory of the Laboratories for Fundamental Research, is one of the world's experts on the practical applications of remote viewing and other aspects of extraordinary human functioning. For almost 20 years, he was the research director and chairman of the Mobius Society. The laboratory carried out research into remote viewing, creativity, therapeutic intent, other areas of human performance. He is the author and co-author of over 30 technical papers, 4 books, I've got them listed here, numerous magazine pieces. He is the editor of the Schwartz Report, an international daily publication. He is former special assistant for research and analysis to the new chief of naval operations, editor of Sea Power magazine, staffer of National Geographic Society. Wow! He is the founder of the Society for Anthropology of Consciousness, the International Remote Viewing Association, and the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energies and Energy Medicine, and is a member of the Parapsychology Association. That's quite a list, Stephen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Art. How are you?
That really is a pretty good list there.
Well, I'm getting older.
Yes. Well, aren't we all? All right. I guess the interesting place to begin is actually, a lot of times I take the notes here and I just, you know, toss them away. But I like this. Something is happening in science, it says. We have scientists on all the time here. And as I listen to them, it's clear something is beginning to change in science. It's become extremely obvious to me. The world is beginning to look a little different. And I guess that's a focal point for you, too. In other words, you realize we have this monstrous change on hand, huh?
Yes. We're going through, a substantial change in the way we view the world as working. It's happened before. You know, I mean, in the past there, we went through for a number of, up until the 19th century, the Bible was the principal scientific document, and the Genesis meta-paradigm, I guess that's the way to put it, was the principal way of looking at the world, and it's changed. Although, let it be said that, you know, not everybody changes. It's 43% of the American public still believes that the world was created 6,000 years ago in 6 days. So
I know.
It's, but we are changing. I think, particularly in science, there is an emerging, a new perspective.
Is this emerging new perspective directly in opposition to, well, for example, Genesis, since you mentioned that? That sounds like a yes, and you don't want. It sounds like a yes, and you don't want to say it.
No, well, actually, you know, to tell you the truth, I have to think about that because, I mean, in a sense, what's emerging is a worldview in which all life is interconnected and interdependent. And so at a certain level, that is very biblical in terms of did the world get created 6,000 years ago?
Well, yeah, but
it's
not specifically biblical, really. Not really.
I mean,
it's sort of just maybe biblical in scale, but not biblical in a literal sense.
Well, you know, almost although we are now talking about things that are defined by science, I mean, that's the interesting point, is that science and ancient wisdom traditions, science and Buddhism, have a great deal to say to one another.
How about science and Christianity? Do they talk a lot? No, I don't think so.
Well, no. Actually, let me read. No. There is within Christianity, as there is in every major tradition, an esoteric, a spiritual pilgrimage path that is different than the sort of outer involvement. So, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, yeah, let me. Within Christianity, there is a mystical tradition, and always has been.
Well, I've interviewed a lot of biblical sorts, many of them national leaders in the category, who absolutely believe that dinosaurs and men walked together
I know.
On the earth, Stephen.
I know. It's it's astonishing. It's a form of it's a willful decision to reject evidence, however compelling.
Well, we've always had it. The Earth is flat, right? Until it was made to be known to be round beyond all shadow of any doubt whatsoever. Nobody actually fell off the Earth, despite rumors at the time. They didn't do it. So, I don't know. Does this mean that... What do you think it ultimately means for Christianity, Stephen? Does it mean that we have to have some wild interpretation of Genesis so that we can live with both science and what's written in the Bible? Or how's it all going to settle out? Does Christianity have to, in effect, be rewritten?
I think that Christianity is and always has had two tracks. The Pauline track, on Peter I Found the Church, and the track that is exoteric, that has to do with priests and structures and rules and social values, and the Johannine tradition of Christianity, which is saying you're Gnostic, your experience, your direct experience of God, of the transcendent, however that comes to you, is the purpose of religious life. And those two tracks have always existed. They've always been present in the United States.
And you think they will continue? You don't think
absolutely.
You don't think it'll be rewritten to accommodate what we know?
No, I think we are experiencing a rise of fundamentalism throughout the world. It's not just Islamic fundamentalism. They're not all the same. I'm not equating them, but the fundamentalism as a factor in the social structure of countries is a presence in a way that anybody who's over the age of 40 can remember. When you were a younger man, fundamentalism was not a factor in the world in the way that it is today, and it is a factor in countries of all persuasions.
What is biblical in proportion, certainly, is stumbling into this mass consciousness, incredible field that science is now uncovering.
Yes.
It's just astounding what's going on and what may be ahead that we just don't even have clues about.
Well, we're beginning to get, as I say, this sense that all consciousness is interlinked and interdependent.
All right, is this that non-locality that everybody talks about? Is that what you're talking about, non-locality?
Yes.
All right, so non-locality means...
Well, non-locality originally comes from an experiment or a theoretical paper that was published by Einstein with two other men, Rosen and Poldowski, who were also at Princeton with him. It was called Can Quantum Mechanical Description of Physical Reality Be Considered Complete? And it was really talking about subatomic particles. I mean, it's talking about things at a very small scale. But what's interesting is that today, increasingly, that explanation at the quantum level is not only explains but predicts the outcome of experiments.
Okay, well, I don't want to lose the audience here. Let's try and explain. For example... Let's see. Would it be true that the experiments of having one source of light in two places at the same time is a kind of a parallel? In other words, you could have an atom in one place and an atom 1,000 miles away, and for some reason that we don't understand, they would both behave identically under certain experimental conditions. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, here's the headline. Any two particles which have had a period of proximity that come from the same source were created at the same time.
Yes.
They have a relationship, a kind of memory of each other that is such that if one of them is affected, the other is affected, no matter how far apart they are and no matter if they're traveling apart at the speed of light.
All right.
So it doesn't matter what... The key is that it doesn't matter... distance doesn't matter.
Right, got it.
And that's exactly what we see, for instance, in remote viewing experiments. Distance doesn't matter.
Is there any way of measuring a time factor with regard to this information? In other words, if particle A here and particle B in Moscow,
right,
X number of miles apart, react instantly at the same time,
right,
conventional thinking says, well, you know, there's got to be a communication that's going on between particle A and particle B all those miles,
right,
away, and we should be able to measure eventually the transmission beginning at point A and ending at point B, or the other way around, whichever way it's going.
Yeah, but it's not a transmission.
But it's not.
Okay,
exactly right. It's not a transmission.
Yeah, there's
it's
nothing.
Something,
there's not. Information is not being transmitted. It has to do with the state of beingness of the thing. It's what Einstein calls spooky action at a distance.
All right, the state of beingness. Now, that's a little difficult to grasp, but just the fact that these two things are interconnected and they both are being, they're both happening, so it's happening. This mysterious connectivity that we can't explain, right?
Exactly. Let me see if I can... Look, there is a very famous experiment, and it's called, it's got such a strange name. I can't think of the name of the researchers, but let me go past that and describe the experiment. It's an experiment in which they, two people sit and meditate together. And they meditate for about 20 minutes and, you know, period. And this was published. The Grinberg Zeilberbaum. Zeilberbaum?
No wonder you couldn't remember.
Anyway,
it okay.
was published in a physics journal. And these two people sit and meditate, and then they separate them. That is, they establish a common experience, just like two particles. And then they take one of them and they monitor, they hook them up to a brain monitor, and put them in a Faraday cage so that there can be no transmission, no electromagnetic transmission.
Yes.
And then they put the other person of the team that was meditating together in another Faraday cage, and they found that when the brainwave patterns of the person who was being monitored were the same as the person who was
Which is completely impossible. Now, a Faraday cage, folks, blocks all RF, blocks all radio frequency.
All electromagnetic radiation.
Whatever kind of radiation. But, you know, Stephen, maybe they don't have the right kind of cage. I mean, that's to block radiation that man knows about. And maybe the radiation...
That's the point. Yes, I agree with you. That's it. It's not happening at the... it's not happening in the electromagnetic spectrum.
Right.
Years ago, I did a submarine experiment with, and I asked Russ Targ and Hal Puthoff, who were at SRI, and Ingo Swan.
Oh, I heard about this.
And my idea came from looking at research when I was working in the Navy, and I was able to get this submarine, and we put two remote viewers down at the bottom of the, or hanging actually midway in the sea, so they were surrounded by all this seawater. And we asked them to describe where people were who were randomly told to go in certain places. And they were able, with amazing amount of detail, to do so. And
yes,
they couldn't, that would not be possible if it was a radio phenomena, because we know exactly how much seawater shields against radio transmission.
Well, yes.
But
we also know, I mean, let's roll over this. There are antennas in the Midwest that are able to transmit submarines deep
That's
underwater
right, ELF.
At an extremely
That's right.
low baud rate.
It's called ELF.
That's right.
And it was created as a thing called Project Sanguine. In fact, that's why I was able to do this experiment, because the government had spent $125 million figuring out exactly what the penetration rate of extreme low frequency radio frequency was and how deep it would penetrate and how much information you could get across. And it was, so we had an exact depth, and we knew that if you went past that depth, that the amount of information that it would take to respond accurately to the remote viewing couldn't be gotten through the water in the time allotted. And we knew that because that was the research that was the basis for creating Project Sanguine, which was the way the Navy spoke with the missile submarines that go down and don't come up again for 6 months.
And yet, Stephen, there is an information exchange that's occurring. I guess that's what I've got to reach out and finally understand. There doesn't have to be, but my mind can't grasp that fact. I'm thinking at a frequency we don't understand, in a realm or even a dimension we don't understand, this communication is taking place.
To say that the information transfers implies a spatial relationship.
Yes.
Suppose we're all workstations on the cosmic internet. I mean, you're sitting at your computer in Pahrump.
Well, then I'm going to.
And I'm sitting at my computer in Virginia Beach.
And fine, we're going to exchange information at the speed of light.
That's right. So suppose, just as an analogy, we were all workstations on a kind of cosmic internet. So you don't have any transfer. This is an internet that has no dimension. It's not time or space. It's just it's a state of beingness. I know that's a hand-waving term, but
yeah,
just for want of anything else, it is a state of beingness in which we all share, in fact, all life forms from the simplest little single cell all the way up. Anything that's alive, that's part of what being alive is about. And there's a lot of experimental evidence for this. That's what's intriguing about it. I mean, if you look at experiments that, for instance, have been done, Helmut Schmidt's experiments involving fish, or William Broad's experiment involving electric fish.
Roll back, what fish?
Well, Helmut Schmidt is a very interesting physicist. He's one of the real pioneer researchers in consciousness, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he designed an experiment in which he had a nuclear isotope that was decaying in what, by definition, is a random way.
Mm-hmm.
And he recorded onto onto six chips the information of those particle emissions as clicks. So when a particle went off, a click occurred on the thing. And so if you played it back, what you would get would be click, 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 click.
You know,
it's random. So there would be a few clicks.
Right.
And he ran this thing for months and recorded the information on the six chips.
And then what? The fish
and
finally
then he, well, he, then he kept one chip, and he sent the other five chips off to scientists who were friends, and he said, just lock this up and forget about it, and don't play it. Just lock it up.
Yes.
And then he asked, then he had a computer randomly select out of that long period of time that he had been recording these clicks to select just a particular 30-minute period during all those months.
Yes.
And he brought people in. This was some weeks, months later, after the clicks had been recorded. Now, the clicks are in the past. And he said to the people, I'm going to play this thing for you, and you're going to hear clicks. And your task is, and he went over to the computer, and he asked the computer, should they make more clicks or less clicks? The computer had a random number generator that decided that.
Real quick, we're coming up on a break.
Okay, and so they said, make more clicks. And they found out people could do it. And at first they thought, well, maybe it's just that they're sort of psychokinetically affecting the chip that he's working on. So if that were true, then if you got the other five chips, then they would sound different. So he went and got the other five chips and played them, and they sounded just like the first chip.
Ooh.
Therefore, it was not psychokinetic.
But it was a connection we cannot explain. Click, click, click. Stephen Schwartz is my guest. We're talking about remote viewing and mass consciousness. I'm Art Bell from the high desert in the middle of the night. Take care out there in Florida.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and I'm a little like a bulldog with a piece of red meat in my mouth when I get a hold of something like this that fascinates me so dramatically. Tomorrow night, Robert, make that Rupert Sheldrake. Sheldrake is the guy who did the experiments with the dogs. Do you remember that? Dogs who absolutely threw a precognitive message. I'm reaching here with the word message. Or just this common connection with their owners, knew exactly when their owners are coming home. He did all those experiments. And he's saying that intuition, precognition, and telepathy are not paranormal, but they're just normal things that human beings are endowed with, but they don't use them. They don't turn the switch that allows these things to come on. This great connectivity that we're talking about tonight with Stephen Schwartz is probably the conduit, and even conduit is the wrong name for whatever in the hell it is that connects A with B, but it's a powerful force. Believe me, it's a powerful force. We'll be right back. Steve and I discovered or stumbled into all of this that we're now talking about, I guess, back with this incredible series of experiments that I did that proved to me personally, and I think most of the audience who went through it and listened to it on the radio, that this is absolutely real. This, whatever it is we're talking about right now,
right,
it's not BS. It's real.
No.
It's absolutely real. And how much we have yet to do, I have a feeling we're just on the very outer fringes of beginning to even discover that it's a real force. It's a real thing. But understanding it, not yet. And being able to direct it, I don't think we're quite ready for that yet. But maybe you feel differently, do you?
I think that remote viewing has gone from an obscure laboratory protocol into a social movement. There's now, you know, just do a Google. I mean, there's like 140,000 websites that come up on a remote, do quote, remote viewing, end quote.
Right.
It's amazing. And I started following this in September of 1991. There were about 30,000 sites, and I thought that was pretty amazing. It's been growing at the rate of about 3,000 a month. And it's up to like 150,000 now.
All right. We all know the CIA, you know, and the guys in government had this locked behind closed doors for about 20 years. Now it's been out in the public for quite a while.
The truth is, Art, that it's always been out there. I started doing it at the same time as SRI. I started Mobius, and we did, I wouldn't do classified research. That's just a personal decision. I don't make any judgment about anybody.
Why not?
Because I thought that anything that involved human consciousness that you discovered ought to be shared with everybody.
Huh.
And it ought to just be out there and not worry about. I just didn't. But I understand the difference. I was using it to locate archaeological sites. They were using it for intelligence work. And that has had the unintended or perhaps unforeseen consequence that it's made it attractive to a lot of men.
Well,
remote viewing attracts as many men as women, which is extremely unusual.
Yes.
In the sort of extraordinary human function.
Well, here's something I don't understand, Steve. Let's see if you can break it down for me. If remote viewing, after all, the experiment ostensibly ended by the government, we are told.
And the government stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'm told.
Yeah.
Now,
they did, I think.
Maybe. Maybe, well, but I mean, if it really worked, at the time there were some who said it was stopped because it wasn't effective.
Well, Carter, you know, they asked Jimmy Carter, what was the most amazing thing that you saw when you were president? And his answer was to describe a remote viewing experiment in which they located a downed aircraft. Now,
when did he say that?
You know, I could get you this. I will get you if you like, and you can post it, the citation for that.
I actually, yes.
It's in an interview that he was asked it in an interview.
That is an amazing quote. I frankly didn't know he said that.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is the remote viewing, what we call remote viewing is a protocol for allowing this sense of awareness that all living organisms have, all people have. It's a protocol for allowing this to emerge into your conscious mind. Think of it as a kind of a mental martial art or a kind of mental yoga for the mind. That's really what remote viewing is.
But the government had it for 20 years. Was it effective or was it not effective?
It was effective.
If it was effective, then I find a hard time believing the CIA would kick it out the door.
Well, it's why don't we do stem cell research? I mean, it's perfectly clear that it has all kinds of benefits. And the reason we don't is that we've made a social judgment, or the current administration has made a social judgment.
You're right.
About we are not going to fund that kind of research.
That's
and I
right.
think that exactly the same thing happened with remote viewing. It offended a lot of people's idea of how the world worked. It's very scary if you think about it.
Well, but wait a minute, Stephen. Stem cell research, which you mentioned, offends people because to some people it means taking a life. They believe that's a life those stem cells are taken from. Now, in the case of remote
judgment,
where is the equivalent for remote viewing?
They are both social judgments. You make evaluations. Is there some other compelling reason why we should not do this?
Yeah, but is it fear-based? I mean,
it's absolutely fear-based.
They're afraid.
Oh, yeah.
They're afraid of remote viewing.
Yeah, remote viewing is fear-based.
Why?
Well, because it means that there are no secrets. Think about it. I mean, if you accept the premise that all consciousness is interlinked and interdependent, and that you have the capacity to obtain validatable, testable information. You yourself have had the experience. You know, the reality is that most people who do this for the first time have a sufficiently positive experience that they want to pursue it. You are a living example of that.
Well, I may be, but the part that I can't grasp is the CIA does not have the ethical, moral worry about using remote viewing, nor would I imagine they're afraid of it if it really tells them what the enemy is doing.
There are people who are in the Congress who would see it as satanic.
Satanic?
Yes, and would block any research that they found out about on this for the same reason that they would block other kinds of research, because
they
make moral, social values.
I can take a bite out of that one. Okay, so some view it as satanic. You're quite right. I've had people on this program, even people of the cloth, who have suggested it might be satanic.
It's all nonsense. It's a natural form. It's a natural part of being alive. It's present in all cultures, all genders, across all times and all geography. It's present everywhere. It is a function. The earliest recorded remote viewing experiment, which is essentially indistinguishable from a modern-day experiment, was recorded in the 5th century B.C. and involved King Croesus, of whom we derive the term as rich as, who did the first recorded outbound remote viewing experiment.
If I had a witch here right now, Stephen, a witch would say exactly the same thing. She would say, Art, witchcraft is as old as man. Witchcraft is as natural as the wind and the sun and the earth. It's nothing but would you agree with that with regard to witchcraft?
No. What I would say is that the portion of witchcraft, people only hear headlines, but let me say it a third time, the portion of witchcraft which involves the idea that all consciousness is interconnected and interdependent
is correct.
Is the part that is correct. The rest of it is ritual, and you do it for whatever reason you do it. And that same idea of interconnectedness and interdependence occurs in every spiritual path.
But if they
history.
If they believe that, Stephen, and the ritual represents the intent,
that's
then
how you get make the contact. We develop rituals that give us permission to open ourselves up to this this channel.
You're right. But where I was going is that from then it might be that witchcraft is real. In other words, if there is that kind of mind ability and there's the intent to get something done or have something done to somebody, it can work.
Yes. We have experiments. We know it works. There are all kinds of prayer experiments that demonstrate that you can pray for people even if they don't know you're doing it and you don't know who they are. All you have is their name. There are studies. There's something like Larry Dossey and I compiled about 200 peer-reviewed, refereed journal articles on prayer. There are studies that show, Carol Nash at the University of Pittsburgh, for instance, that show that if you send negative energy to cell colonies, that you will affect them more than a control group that they're compared against. And if you send positive energy, you will cause them to change compared to a control group. And the positive change will be more powerful than the negative change, but the negative change will still be significant.
Right you are, Stephen. Let's think about this then. Witchcraft is real.
Witchcraft is a ritualized way of making contact with this aspect of the self.
And
you could also do it with Buddhic meditation or Sufi dancing.
And you said prayer is real, right? It works.
Yes, absolutely.
Prayer works. But here's the $64 million statement.
Okay.
Prayer, sincere intent directed, works whether God's name is used or not.
That's
right? Correct. Okay, well, that's satanic.
No, well, I mean, it's satanic if you're a fundamentalist, I suppose, in a way.
That's right.
But that's correct. What we discover, what we call therapeutic intent, that is the intent to have a therapeutic effect on the well-being of another via a mechanism that is unknown.
And by that very same mechanism, people can make themselves well or sick and die.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, there have been two major meta-studies of the placebo research, and what they discover is that placebo is about 35% of the cases over all the placebo studies, that in about 35% of the cases, the people do as well or better on placebo than they do on the same medication, than on the actual medication.
So all it means is it's like voodoo. It means that the person taking the placebo thinks they're going to get better because they think this is good medicine, and so they take it, and by God, they get better.
Yes, and there are even surgical placebo studies that show the same result, where they did surgeries, but they made the incision, but they didn't actually do anything. And there are two studies that I can think of right off the top.
Boy, that's really nasty. You mean
cut
somebody open?
A human experimentation committee today. But anyway, they did do it. One was for angina pectoris. They did a ligation.
You mean where they just cut the person open and then the person
doesn't
know what's going on? They sew them up and don't do a damn thing and they get better.
Yes. Yes. Just like any placebo. And what is that telling us? That is telling us that our consciousness. How do you know what? You don't know anything about how some disease operates in your body.
That's right.
Nobody does unless they've gone to school and studied it for a long time. So how do these people know that the medication that they're taking is going to produce a specific kind of results so that they can produce as good or better a result than the people who got the medication? The answer is that consciousness clearly has the capacity to control bodily function down to the cellular level.
Here's something that one of my guests told me once, Stephen, that I've been practicing, and I think it has value. You close your eyes, and you imagine white light washing down on you and purifying you from head to toe. You just force your imagination and cleansing your body and getting rid of whatever it is that ought not be there, whatever. I think that stuff works, and I actually use that.
Yeah, so do I. I have made 4 CDs. Anybody that wants them can go to my website. I've done 4 CDs, one of which is a healing, a healing experience very much along the lines of what you're talking about. It invokes everything that we have learned in the laboratory research. There's no question that individuals have the capacity to bring about what we would call psychophysical self-regulation, but basically you can help your body by the consciousness that you hold, and you can also have an effect on other people's consciousness. And I made these CDs so that you would actually take people through these experiences, because you're quite right. I use them too. And they work.
Well,
that's the most important part.
In a lot of ways, you know, this is going back to the primitive world, Stephen, where, you know, tribes, some old tribes that have been isolated from society somehow have come to know these things and do these rituals.
Right.
And here we are sort of rediscovering it in the modern world and just talking a little differently about it.
That's right. That's exactly right. Science is discovering what ancient spiritual traditions like Buddhism, as an example, have known, or Hinduism, have known for a thousand years. Several thousand years. I mean, this idea, there are two classes of phenomena, basically. There is what we can call anomalous perception. That's anomalous knowing. We don't know what the mechanism is, but it comes in two parts. There's sense impressions, that is, what is the color, taste, touch, or there's just the sense of knowingness. Only a very few people actually are able to visualize. And the other phenomena is anomalous perturbation, and that's consciousness having an effect on on either a mechanism or another living organism. And we know from studies that have been done over and over and over again that the consciousness of one person has the capacity to affect the well-being of another.
Yes.
More than that, there is a reason why all religions have a sense of healing prayer and make it a part of their rituals. I mean, they do it because over long periods of time they observed that it made a difference.
That it worked.
Yes, it was worth preserving. They weren't in a scientific argument. They just observed people got better. So, yeah, we'll do that.
How do you feel about the use of mass consciousness to achieve some large result? Now, we've got a hurricane raging in Florida right now.
Oh, you mean moving the weather?
Well, I mean, for example, tampering with something, the force of a hurricane. That scared the you-know-what out of me, and so I stopped doing it a number of years ago, but because I'm a little concerned about unintended consequences.
That's a very good thing to be concerned about.
You think so, huh?
You betcha. Mm-hmm. We understand dimly and darkly, through a glass darkly, how the complexity of these systems, and if you twiddle with them,
mm-hmm.
you often produce unintended consequences
mm-hmm.
that are as bad or worse
mm-hmm.
than the, because you just don't understand. So that's why most traditions have an invocation of some kind, that it's not my will, but it's not my will, but thine. It's the great force or the transcendent deity or whatever it is, however you want to express that, the Christ spirit, whatever, that you surrender to that process, that you're surrendering to the collective. And they all have that because of that exact problem. Unintended consequences is a very big deal. As we see hundreds of times, look at what's going on in the current elections with the 527s, the funding apparatus. That all came out of what was supposed to be an attempt to correct the system.
Well, it's all about mass intentions.
Yes, it is, absolutely.
The 527s. All right, hold tight. We'll be right back. This is Saturday Night, isn't it? I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and beyond the coast, too. Wandering Skipper, pseudonym in Vancouver, B.C., writes, "Hey, Art. Regarding your opinion on mass consciousness experiments, your viewpoint is well-founded, but there's a big flaw in your logic. How can one understand better without exploration, be it you or future Art Bell? Practical exploration is inevitable." Yes, yes, I suppose so. But, you know, when you're teaching a child about a gun, and it's my personal view that teaching them is better than letting them wonder, you don't let them take it in their hand, point the barrel at their head, and pull the trigger to find out what the mechanism does, right? You instruct them first. That's the whole idea. Get to know it's dangerous, a very dangerous thing that could take your life, and then it's less likely to, as one point of view, and happens to be mine. So, you know, we'll ask Stephen about all this in just a moment. I mean, yes, there's going to be more experimentation. How is it best done? Kind of like having a hydrogen bomb and saying, "Hey, Frank, let's play with all the shiny little buttons on the control panel." Stephen, welcome back.
How are you?
It's a valid question, how we proceed with responsible experiments to find out what can and can't be done with all of this.
I think that's a very good question.
Hmm.
I think the answer is it life-affirming?
Well, look, turning a hurricane away from the coast would be life-affirming, but maybe it wouldn't work out the way you intended.
That's
so,
the point.
I mean, scientifically, how do we progress with this? Is it life-affirming? Well, we hope so, but at what scale do we experiment to find out about things?
I think, you know, this has been a perennial problem as long as science has existed. You have to, in a certain way, you have to rely on the integrity of the people who are playing the game. And, you know, over the last several hundred years that they've been at it, I mean, we don't have a bad track record. There are some bad guys. I mean, there are, you know, Nazi scientists and things, but they actually are fairly rare. The truth is that most people who get into this are deeply motivated people. There's only a relatively small number that are, I would say, ethically compromised.
Yeah, well, we spend a lot of time thinking about this small number of people, and from our point of view, the fundamentalists who want to kill us and destroy our buildings, they would be a group of people with very sharp, strong intent.
Yeah, not life-affirming. Yes, they do have strong intent. You know, if you think about it, I mean, this is a virtual state. This is like we are having a war with a virtual state. They don't have any geography. They are a point of view. And what is particularly interesting about this is that what makes America distinct is that it is an idea.
Yes.
You know, if you go to Italy, the people are Italians. I mean, they've been there a long time, and there's a lot of history, and it's a genetic pool of people. I mean, what makes Germans different than Frenchmen? It's culture and genetics, and so they come out of deep bases that come out of tribal thing. America has always been an idea. The founders created an idea, and when you come to the United States, you stop being whoever you are. You know, you could live in Germany for the rest of your life, and if you're Turkish, you are never going to be German. But if you come to the United States, doesn't matter who you are, if you subscribe to the idea, then you're an American.
Yep. Yep.
And it's that makes a lot of difference. Plus, there's one other thing. America is the only country in which one race fought a war against, amongst itself, a kind of family feud, literally brother against brother, over the status of another race.
Yes.
That is amazing. There is no other example of that in history that I know of.
Well, except on the negative side.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, yes. I mean, the negative side's well populated.
So, you know, I mean, you're right about that. And we are an idea and a concept and a very, very strong one with basic precepts that seem so universal. Freedom, individual, freedom and responsibility and all of that. Oh, yes. Yes.
And the guys we are fighting are also motivated by an idea. They're not even physically proximate to one another.
Well,
they are a virtual state.
Yeah, here's
they
thing.
Have a very strong intention.
Yeah, so strong. I mean, if you measure their apparent intention against even, well, say, the Nazis, for example, I judge this to be even stronger than the Nazis, level of intent of people
you.
Who will blow themselves up and...
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. The intent is incredible. So
that's right.
So,
I agree with you, Art.
Yes.
I think that this is a group of people the like of which we have not seen for a very long time and have never seen previously on an international scale.
Here, here.
Where the principal weapon is women who are willing to blow themselves up.
Absolutely.
People who are willing to blow their children up.
That too. I mean, this is just incredibly strong. So, How much do we assign to the importance of the level of the strength of the intent?
I think intent. This is the realm of the will. That's my personal view. I can't support this science. I mean, I can't cite experiments exactly, but as I can in other things.
I'm just wondering how strong an ingredient intent is.
Intent is will. Think of it as power, energy, spirit, whatever it is you want to, whatever word works for you, directed by will. That's intent. And if you, if your will is strong and you are willing to commit everything to it,
yes,
you are an irresistible force in some ways. I mean, you can get at anybody. Look at the guy that assassinated Gandhi.
Yes. Yes, so that's what we're facing, an intent of that magnitude.
People who worship death. These are people who believe that it is a positive good to martyr yourself.
Yes.
And that people who do that ought to be revered as heroes.
That's right. And they believe there's a great reward that awaits them for all of this.
Yes.
So, intent again is incredibly strong and
important.
And important. That's what I was searching for. It's an important aspect of whatever it is that we're directing.
That's right. And that's why, in order to resist terrorism, we have to live our idea. What concerns me is that, as an expression of mass consciousness, is that fear is a wonderful short-term motivator. You know, I mean, if a lion is coming after you or something, you have a real strong reason for moving as quickly as possible.
You sure do.
But as a long-term strategy, it doesn't work very well. And what concerns me is that what we ought to be doing is demonstrating the integrity of who we are.
Isn't that what you're supposed to actually do in front of a lion? Not move fast? That if you run, the lion is more likely to...
Yes, if you run, the lion just sees you.
Thinks of you as prey, and boom.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes. And actually, that's, just to carry that analogy out, that's pretty good. I didn't think about that, but that's true. Is that we need to just stand still and be who we are.
And face the fear.
Yes. And... You know, if you look at it in terms of just as a war, I mean, 19 guys and $500,000 were able to bring the largest power on Earth to its knees in many ways. I mean, it has altered our lives in thousands of ways, great and small.
It has, yes.
It's astonishing. I mean, if you were a terrorist, and you looked at what did it cost you? It cost you the lives of 19 people and $500,000. I mean, we've spent $200 billion in Iraq. So that they were able to accomplish this for what is reputed to be $500,000 from their point of view means that they have been very successful.
Yes. Absolutely, yes. And what does that portend, well, Stephen, or do you even want to venture into that territory, that
I
level?
I think by attacking, we set up a recruitment program that we're going to have to pay a big price to dismantle. Our strength is to be people of absolute integrity who do what they say and say what they do, but who look at the source of this problem is not endlessly killing terrorists in some Orwellian war that has no end. The answer to this is to produce cultures, to help the nurturing of cultures that will make people choose differently. You know, if you look at one thing, just look at a population. What we now see from 15 years ago is that the greatest, most powerful contraceptive in the world is an educated woman. As you educate women, they choose to have fewer children. And it happens whether it's in a rich country or in a poor country like Bangladesh. So that tells us something. That's a data point. If we emphasize the things which are the greatness of our idea.
You say it's education. Other people say it's selfishness. That
they don't want to have children?
That modern women, particularly in industrialized nations that are fairly well off, and we fit squarely in that category.
Oh, that's a different level. You're talking about people
are having,
who are much further down the line.
Are having fewer children because their quality of life is higher without so many children.
Yeah, it's an educated Bangladeshi housewife in a small village understands now that she'll do better if she limits the number of children she has.
That's recent news. I didn't know she
had
decided
that. And they don't.
That,
I mean, the birth rate has dropped enormously.
Mm-hmm.
So we know we can affect social change. We know people don't smoke anymore. When you were 20 years old, everybody who knew smoked, right?
Be careful here. I still smoke.
Well, I don't care. I mean, but everybody you knew smoked.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Okay?
Yes.
Today, smokers are a minority. I don't care whether you smoke. That's
yes,
fine.
I know.
I'm not having moral judgment. I'm just simply saying that.
We are a persecuted minority.
They are being persecuted.
Yes.
I agree with that, by
yes.
the way.
Yes.
But the point is that we have affected social change. We have done it in. People exercise in ways that they didn't exercise, because we know that it's important for heart health.
If it gets any worse, I'm applying for federal discrimination action.
It is. It's very sad, you know, to see those few people clustered out under the eave of some building in the rain. It really is. It seems very unfair.
Yeah.
That's true. You all are a person.
You need not get on my side. That's quite right. So that's affected social change. I mean, you're right
we
about
that.
We can
do it. That's my point. We can do this by emphasizing the things which are life-affirming and that work with liberty and self-empowerment of individuals and groups, which is the core. You know, the thing that de Tocqueville said when he came here in the 1830s was, Americans are a people who have an absolutely committed belief in the fact that human beings can make their lot better.
All right. Here's a straight-on question for you. Exactly how good is remote viewing? How much better is remote viewing than a 50-50 chance for anything?
You should expect to see, in an average remote viewing, just sort of over a period of time, you should expect to see about 75 to 85% of the material be evaluated as correct or partially correct. It is possible under controlled conditions produce a 95% probability of accuracy.
All right. Well, I was going to say, I've had remote viewers on the program who say, look, Art, with a trained remote viewing crew, that means, you know, six
yes.
or eight remote viewers who are really good, when they get a certain percentage of agreement among the remote viewers, they put it in the high 90s. Some claim 100%, that they just flat can't be wrong past a certain point.
Well, I've never seen 100% accuracy in anything. It's certainly not, maybe an individual thing, but what I would say, and I'm willing to back this up with published papers, I mean, anybody that's interested can go up to my website and get them.
Yes.
Is that, for instance, the archaeological stuff, we evaluated each concept that was offered by a remote viewer. So, and for instance, if they said, the man sitting at the microphone, on the ball, right?
Yes.
If they said that would be, that's one sentence, but it's man, sitting, microphone, ball. That's like four concepts. And so if each of those concepts is evaluated as correct, partially correct, incorrect, can't be evaluated, we expected to see of the part that could be evaluated, there's a certain percentage you just can't evaluate, but of the part that could be evaluated, we expected it to be between 75% and 85% accurate.
All right, but see, here's...
And that ran over about 20 years.
Yeah, but here's what I just can't digest, and this is like a rewind to a little while ago, Stephen, and that is that if the message could be, for example, man, bomb, flight 1125...
Well, you wouldn't get flight 1125.
All right, well, whatever. Get close enough so that it would be useful information for the FBI or whoever else would stop this kind of thing, then this would be in use today. And the fact that it's not in official use seems beyond all reason to me.
I would agree. It's not about reason. It's not a rational decision. I mean, I will tell you that I had 47 people who had never done remote viewing who came to a seminar that I taught last year. I asked them on the 3rd of November to locate and describe where Saddam Hussein would be captured and discovered by the coalition or U.S. forces.
And came up with what?
And came up with sufficient information that you could, that as I was told by one of the officers, you could have driven to the place. And I'll send this to you. I had it all notarized, put in a bank vault.
Okay, see, that's a precise example, exact example of why they would be using it. They don't have, look, our CIA ain't that moral. They ain't that ethical.
Well, it has nothing to do with morality. It's not about morality. It's about your worldview, the idea that people ought not to be able to do this.
Are you serious? I mean,
yes, absolutely, I'm serious.
Okay, fine. That would be the average person's fear, but you're going to tell me that's a CIA executive who needs to know secrets more than anything else in the world. He needs to know these things.
Well, let me tell you, I've been doing this for almost 30 years now. Actually, for 30 years. And I have used the remote viewing and compared it against side scan sonar and magnetometers and satellite photographs,
right,
and all kinds of other electronic remote sensing.
Right.
And I will tell you, and I am prepared to back it up. And again, you can go get the papers. I mean, this is all written down. It's all witnessed by dozens of people. It's all, you know, blah, blah, blah. That if I had only one way to go look for something, I would use remote viewing.
You're that confident?
Absolutely.
And that includes, would that include a dead body?
You mean if somebody said, can you locate a dead body?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'd have to know a little more about it, but given the right set of circumstances, yeah, I think you'd have. In fact, I've located dead bodies.
So it doesn't matter then whether a body is alive or dead.
No.
It's equally locatable.
Equally locatable? No, I would actually think a dead body was probably harder to locate than a living being, although if it died in a situation of extreme violence where there was a kind of powerful transmutation of energy,
really,
then it would probably be easier to see. Because,
is that right?
Yeah, because when you look in psi space in this dimension or whatever it is where people get the information,
yes,
there is no time and space, but what does make things more visible is that they have that there be a transmutation of some kind occurring, some transformation of energy. Like, for instance, a picture of a tornado would be much easier to see than the picture of a rice paddy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that there's a tremendous amount of release of energy across part of the picture.
The force the force has been more affected by the tornado?
Well, there's just, it's more numinous would be the way I would describe it. For instance...
Okay, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We've got to take a break. The force. I don't know. Why not the force? That's a Star Wars phrase, but may the force be with you, right? Well, maybe it is.
This part of the show, listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Dead Like Me is back. It's a great show on Showtime. And they use this music a lot.
Covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to come.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It certainly is. Good morning, everybody. Hurricane Frances at this hour is 27.2 north, 80.4 west. It's about 25 miles east of Okeechobee in Florida, 105-mile-an-hour winds. It continues to have 105-mile-an-hour winds, moving west-northwest at all of 8 miles an hour. That's it. Pressure is now 2835 inches, or 960 millibars, and the terror continues in Florida. In a moment, we'll continue the terror right here. Love it. I know this hurricane is just ripping the East Coast apart, and people say, well, then why not intend for it to go fast across the state of Florida? Just zoom right across. It won't do so much damage. Oh, yeah, very tempting. Only, once again, when you toy around with things of this magnitude, you have no way of knowing. Maybe it would go tearing across Florida and then get out into the Gulf and stop dead and build like you know what and then slam into Louisiana or something awful like that. So, again... You don't know the forces that you're tampering with, when you apply concentration. If you don't know how to apply it, you just don't know what the result is going to be. Now, with respect to remote viewing, I've got a hard question for you, Stephen.
Okay.
Have you ever, remote viewed, and if not, would you, the manner of your own death?
I'm not personally interested in knowing that, because I think it would, whatever the answer, whether it was right or wrong, it might bias choices that I would make, and I would rather make the choices without, on their own merits, without any countervailing bias.
Well, I have,
and I'm not sure that you would get accurate information because it's such a numinous event for you that I'm not sure you would get.
Mm-hmm. Well, my follow-up question would have been, I'm on your side. I don't want to know the manner of my own death. I just don't want to know. But... it begs the question, if you could do it, and or maybe one of your fellow remote viewers being more dispassionate about, say, your death,
right,
could view it successfully. If that could be done, and it was relatively accurate, Stephen, then could you conceivably take steps to alter that occurrence? I mean, just make sure that instead of being in Cincinnati, where you're supposed to die, you get on an airplane. Yeah, you get on an airplane and go to South Africa to be doggone sure. You know, could it be changed?
Yes. All remote viewing is probabilities. It's not. It is not the actualized future. It is the most probable future. So it absolutely. And examples of that are Edgar Cayce endlessly talking about things happening to California that didn't happen in the time frame. And I think the reason was is that the consciousness changed over a period of time. It's all about consciousness, because consciousness is the principal reality. The rest of it is, you know, is a manifestation, or if you're...
Well, what kind of consciousness saved California?
I think the consciousness of the state changed. There was an awareness amongst a certain number of people about this, and they made different choices ecologically. They made choices about, you know, air cleanliness. And
you think that affects, you really think that affects what happens in California geologically, for example? I mean.
Well, I think our consciousness has all kinds of effect. Intention, expect. I mean, it's sort of obvious, sort of, no, not obvious, gross levels. Look at global climate change. Global climate change, I mean, even the White House, which has now reversed itself.
Yes, what a surprise, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it says, yes, this is, many of these elements are as a result of human activity. Well, if you had different human activity, that's why, once you get this point of view,
mm-hmm,
you make different political choices, because we have the capacity, we certainly have the money, to create an alternative to petroleum energy. We are like junkies. We are junkies. We're not like junkies. We are a junkie as a nation, and we're dealing with dealers, and they even look like dealers. I mean, they drive around in flashy cars and wear a lot of gold and have scantily clad women, you know, by the dozen. And it's like we go into a bad neighborhood and we get this guy who's got the fancy suit and the gold thing, and we, you know, we're getting our fix. It's exactly the same kind of addictive behavior played out at the national level that you would see in an individual.
I suppose so. I never quite thought of oil executives in that manner, but...
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe.
We are junkies. We live on petroleum, and that's the fix. And we have the capacity to free ourselves from that. Look, Germany has made a national decision. They're going to have 23% of their energy generated by wind power.
And I might add that these guys are so good, Stephen, that they deal in it in the barrels, because it's
legal. Yes.
By the barrelful.
Think about it. That's right. They buy it by the kilo and they sell it by the carat.
Yes. Well, even though we seem to have some level of consciousness now in the U.S. about energy, nevertheless, we continue, as you point out, like a junkie, to use it uncontrollably. Now,
absolutely.
Okay, so where are we headed here with regard to climate change? You're a remote viewer. Have you looked at anything like that?
Absolutely.
And?
I'm very interested in climate change. Next year... This year's Schwartz Report conference is on the physics of consciousness. Next year's is going to be about global climate change. I've been following this story for 7 years.
Uh-huh. And have you remote viewed the subject a lot?
Yes. I have been doing an experiment since 1978, Art. It's one of the CDs that I've got of getting people to go forward to the year 2050.
And
they describe, I've been doing it now for almost 30 years, and something like 4,000 people have taken part in this experiment.
Well, let's hear it. What do they describe?
Well, if I describe it, then all your viewers will be predisposed, but all right.
Yes, no, you're not getting away with that.
I will tell you that in 1978 they started talking about AIDS. They didn't call it AIDS. They said There's this blood disease that crosses over from primates, and it comes out of Africa, and it spreads all over the earth and kills tens of thousands of millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I thought, what in the world is this? And I took it to a friend of mine who was the deputy director of cardiovascular research at NIH, and I said to him, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 1979, I think, and he said, I haven't a clue. And, of course, several years later, AIDS began, 81, whatever it was, began to emerge, and now it's very clear what it is.
Oh, yes.
They describe in detail the development of virtual reality, which I also did not understand. The reason I picked 2050, by the way, is if you go any further down line, you wouldn't understand what they brought back.
Well, what is our 2050 world like, Stephen?
Well, the 2050 world is, there has been massive global climate change. There's been a, finally, some of it is still an issue. People live very differently than they do today. They live in communities which, there's been some sort of energy revolution.
A revolution?
And it has allowed... And there's also been another generation of information revolution, so that it's possible to transmit enormous quantities of information.
Well, that's cool.
And because of their people now have energy abundance, you can live anywhere you want. And so there's been, as a result of global climate change, areas like the southwestern United States have been largely abandoned.
What?
Because of the heat. It's going to be terrible.
Well, it's already
The southern states are going to become tropical, roughly speaking.
Where I live, the American Southwest you mentioned, I'm 20.
Yeah,
I
know exactly where you are. You're going to have a hard time.
I'm 20 miles from Death Valley.
You're going to have a terrible time. Water is going to become a just impossible problem in the Southwest.
Hmm. Well, that might make some sense.
We're going to be having periods of temperature 115 degrees regularly, and I can tell you that when it gets that hot, people, even Bedouins, don't work in that kind of heat. I mean, people just don't operate well when it gets that hot. We're going to have rising, the coastline's going to rise, doesn't have to rise very much. For large sections of the coastline of all over the world, I mean, countries like Bangladesh, for instance, you know, the average height is like 4 feet above seawater. So it doesn't have to rise. Look at the Bahamas. They had just had, because of this dreadful hurricane, they've had surges of 10 to 14 feet. And Nassau, I mean, the highest place in Nassau, just on a guess, I would say, was about 30 feet.
It's clear, Stephen, when you look at the top and bottom of the globe, that they're melting.
Yeah.
I mean, it really comes down to that.
Oh, absolutely. You go to Glacier National Park, they'll tell you the glaciers are going to be gone in about 15 years, 20 years.
Right, I know. The top and bottom of the world are melting. I saw some pictures of the North Pole 10 years, you go, oh, my God, two-thirds of it are gone.
Yeah.
And there's going to be oceans, and they're going to be planning to navigate them and everything. So the world and the climate is absolutely before our eyes changing, and a lot of people have not grasped
that
yet.
It's the 600-pound gorilla. It's my biggest problem with the current administration is that they don't. We are at a place where this reaches a tip point, and once it tips, it's going to be almost impossible to reverse it because the inertia of the system is so immense that once it reaches a critical tip point and tips, it's just going to happen. I mean, you know, it's...
Well, that's interesting because that was sort of the contention in global superstorm, there is a threshold point, a virtual kind of switch, as you point out, and that when you pass a certain point, events escalate exponentially.
Yeah, I mean, the business of the world ocean, the conveyor that moves the energy around, the temperature around, this it's the whole world ocean. You think of it as one ocean. The breakdown of this pump is going to produce tremendous changes all over. Europe is going to be radically different. This weather thing is very serious, and it's why hundreds of Nobel laureates and leading scientists in who have studied this, I mean, the people who have taken the time to master the subject to the degree that we have mastery of it, all have a point of view. The only people that don't are a few guys who get most of their funding out of the energy industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even the Bush administration has reversed itself now.
Well, the one positive thing that you said about 2050 was it's obvious that there's been some kind of energy revolution. Do you have any idea at all? Can you describe what might have happened? Do you see clearly enough what might have occurred to give us an idea of where it's going to occur?
Where what's going to occur?
This revolution in energy. In other words, some new source apparently is discovered.
No, I haven't asked that question.
Or harnessed. It sure would be cool to know what...
I didn't ask the question. See, I started out with this thing. I had no idea what they were going to say. I mean, I didn't know what they were going to say. Actually, at that point, when I started this experiment, I had been a futurist. I'd just come off of the MIT Secretary of Defense discussion group on innovation, technology, and the future. So I had been reading all of the stuff. And if you remember back, the general take was we were going to have this vast overpopulation problem.
Right.
And we were going to run out of natural resources.
Correct.
And in fact, there was a very famous bet between two guys who bet $1,000, one being an ecologist and the other. And it hasn't worked at all out. I mean, we now know, for instance, that overpopulation... Oh, that was one of the things. The 2050 remote viewers, I asked them all, is it overpopulated?
Yes.
And to a person, practically, they said, no, overpopulation is not a problem. Hmm. I thought, what are these people talking about?
Well, nothing good from our point of view, I'm sure.
Well, no. What we now know is that the sustainable birth rate, 2.1 people, 2.1 children per fertile couple, 1.85 by some models, you have to have that sustainable rate in order to create a population which gets bigger slightly because more people come in than go out. And the truth is that all European countries, none of them have a sustainable birth rate. The United States only has a sustainable birth rate because of its immigration. Even the Islamic countries, which have had, you know, birth rates of 5.6, that kind of, I mean, it's huge numbers, have fallen way back. Overpopulation is not going to be a problem.
You don't think that famine, disease, ecological destruction of various sorts... has a lot to do with reducing the population suddenly.
Yes, I do think the population is significantly reduced. Based on the 2050 remote viewings, population gets reduced in part because of catastrophic events which occur in a number of countries and because of drought.
You mentioned the American Southwest. Where else?
Well, roughly speaking, the southern states are going to become kind of tropical, and the central states are going to become roughly like Florida is now, and the northern states are going to become like the moderate central states are now.
Temperate.
And that's, in fact, it's happening.
Temperate climate.
Yes, a much more temperate climate. We're going to, within our lifetime, see the Northwest Passage, which has never in recorded history been opened, open up. That's at least the latest research that I saw, that the fabled passage that Columbus and everybody were looking for, a way to get across the top of the world to get to the other side, which, of course, didn't exist, they think it's going to open up because of the melting of the ice. This is a very big deal.
It really is.
This is the 600-pound gorilla.
Well, normally humans don't get to experience change this quickly. We're not used to that happening. Things remain generally the same throughout our lifetime. So are we not the first sort of generation to see this acceleration have begun?
Well, there was a kind of mini ice age in the 1750s, earlier, 1712, 1750. In fact, the Battle of Valley, Washington keeping the Army at Valley Forge, part of what made it difficult was that that took place during what's called the Mini Ice Age, where things got real cold again, which is why if you look at paintings from that period, you see, for instance, the canals of Holland iced over and people ice skating on them, because but that's not going to happen now. We're going the other direction. And then it's going to get cold.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. Lots of these changes are going to happen in the lifetime of a person in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Even people in their 60s and 70s are going to see significant amounts of change. I mean, we're already seeing it. Look at what happened last year in Europe. 15,000 people died in Paris because they don't have any air conditioning. The city was never planned to require air conditioning. They never needed air conditioning.
Clearly, it has begun. If I were to ask you, give you an assignment to remote view something, would you do that?
Well, it depends.
Okay, suppose I'm
not going to tell you how to get into the Fort Knox or, you know.
Oh, darn.
Oh.
No, I was going to say, how would you feel about remote viewing Lucifer?
Lucifer?
Mm-hmm. As an entity or as a force?
Energy force?
Yes, uh-huh. You know, it's an interesting.
Sure. I have to think about. That's certainly a very numinous target, Art. I'm not begging off. To be honest with you, I'd have to think about whether it would be possible to get good information, or whether, because there are such strong beliefs about him as an energy force or as a being, that I'm not sure whether they would just get the sort of the cliche images.
Yeah, look, I'm not even so sure. I'm not so sure it'd be a good idea, period. I just know, as you do, a remote viewer who did it. And
what happened?
You don't know about that?
I don't know the story.
Oh, you don't know the story. Hold on, we're at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back, and I'll relate that story to you. And then we'll open up the phone lines and take questions.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Stephen Schwartz is my guest. We're talking about remote viewing, mass consciousness, intent, just all sorts of things this night. In a moment, we're going to turn the phones over to you and let you ask whatever you would like to ask. I think I've pummeled Stephen sufficiently. In a moment, it's your turn. How much would you want to know about the world of 2050? Stephen Schwartz is my guest. And by the way, We always do this for every guest. I mean, he has been a wonderful guy to interview. Very lively, by the way. And he's got a number of books and a DVD, and I thought we should tell you about them. Because obviously, if you have enjoyed this and you want to read about all of this in great detail, and perhaps even want to learn how to do it, then he's written books like Mind Rover, Explorations with Remote Viewing, Remote Viewing Through Time and Space, The Alexandria Project. By the way, that was the DVD, Remote Viewing Through Time and Space. We'll get back to that. The Alexandria Project, The Secret Vaults of Time, Remote Viewing, The Modern Mental Martial Art. But the DVD is, well, that's a good title, Through Time and Space. And it is instantly Through Time and Space. They don't exist. Time and space in the realm in which you remote view do not exist, right, Stephen?
That is correct. The evidence is very compelling that distance makes no difference. It's no harder to see the near than the proximate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the far than the proximate, mm-hmm. that is, things that are close, things that are far away, and time doesn't seem to make any difference.
Would that mean to you that all of this is occurring in what we refer to, or you know, people like Dr. Kaku refer to as another dimension?
One explanation is that there are multiple. One explanation for remote viewing is that there are multiple dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Minkowski in space.
Do you lean toward that? Not necessarily, huh?
It's a very hard question. What I would say on the evidence is, it's a very hard question. I'm not sure I have an answer.
Well,
I'm not
we
sure anybody has an answer.
We specialize in hard questions. That's all right. It's all right not to have an answer once in a while, too.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the evidence is that all life partakes to varying degrees of this connection with the collective. Because otherwise you wouldn't be able to do the healing experiments involving animals. And by the way, I know that Rupert Sheldrake's going to be on your show tomorrow night. He is a wonderful guy.
Is that a perfect follow-up to this program?
Yeah, he's a good friend, and he is a wonderfully creative researcher. Get him to talk about, I won't, because otherwise I was going to talk about him, but get him to talk about the parrot experiments.
Oh.
That's all I'm going to say. Just talk to him about the parrot experiments. They've been filmed. He's got the film. It is quite amazing.
All right.
And let me say one thing about the DVDs, because these are really worth saying. It's worth stopping for a second. Last year, before I did your show, in fact, I did it just before then, every year the Schwartz Report, which is my daily web publication, does a conference. And last year I did it on remote viewing. This year it's on the physics of consciousness, new models of reality, and the mystery of non-locality.
Uh-huh.
And it's a wonderful conference, and you can click on your website, Coast to Coast, and it'll take you there. So I won't say anything about that. But I want to say something about these DVDs, because I'm really happy about these. I filmed this conference. I got all of the founders of remote viewing, all the guys that started it, Hal Puthoff, Russ Targ, myself, Jim Spottiswood, Ingo Swann, and all the guys that had done the Army program. Not all of them, but many of them, the ones who were the commanding officers. And
yeah, that's a big list, all right.
And I filmed these guys. I asked them to talk about the history, the science, the art, and the mysteries of remote viewing. And out of it came 11 hours of programming.
Well, now that's got to be pretty good stuff.
That is, I will tell you, this course will never happen again. This group of people is very unlikely we'll ever all speak together from the same podium. You'll never. Russell Targ, for instance, talks about Buddhism and its relationship with remote viewing, and physics, and it's fascinating. Dale Graft, who was the contract monitor, the Air Force contract and CIA contract monitor, who was part of the ran the SRI. Was their contact, and then also in the Army program, was the commander of the Army program, talks about remote viewing in dreams. He's the only guy I know that has done much on this. It can truly be said of this material that every single person speaking is the best person in the world on his subject.
That's a pretty attractive package.
It's amazing. Yeah. Right, Jim Spottiswood, who is an English researcher, mathematician. James Spottiswood is a brilliant researcher.
And you said Hal Putoff, too, didn't you?
Hal Putoff, Russell Targ.
Russell Targ.
Myself.
I mean, oh, these are big ones. So.
James Spottiswood, Ingo Swann.
How long a CD, or DVD, rather, is it?
Five CD. It's five DVDs.
Oh, my God. So you did
and
the whole thing?
It totals 11 hours of programming, and it is designed to work with the four CDs to produce collectively a total course. You have 11 hours of intellectual instruction, and then you have 4 hours of experiential sessions.
Are you telling me after going through these five DVDs and CD that you could remote view?
You will know everything we in science know about this subject. And I can say that. And you will learn it from the people who are the most knowledgeable researchers in the world on their subjects. When
right,
you talk
so
about local sidereal time, James Spottiswood, who discovered it, talks about it.
All right, this is not a remote viewing instructional tape or DVD.
No, the CDs do that part.
The CDs. All right, so you are getting it all in one package. Number one, you're finding out from the very best in the world about it. And number
yes.
two, then you've got a course that will
you're
keep...
taken through. There is a remote viewing CD that takes you through all the different protocols, gives you all of the how to get the local sidereal time effect, how to get the geomagnetic field strength, when to do your experiments, how to do them. And then it's as if you came into my laboratory and I interviewed you as if you were a remote viewer.
All right, so all these DVDs and CDs, how much are people paying and how do they get them?
Oh, $219.95. Hmm. I made it as cheap as I could possibly make it.
Okay.
And you get, I mean, I feel very strongly about that. I try to, this stuff is as good as I can make it. It's broadcast quality DVDs.
Right.
It's studio produced CDs. And if you take them together, then you get a workbook, too, that has all the forms.
No, that's a big package.
You get everything we know. And I did this because I wanted to have a gold standard body of material that was backed by all of the actual real research.
I'm clear. And so is there a phone number or what?
You go to my website. And if you click on DVDs, it'll take you. Actually, go to www.nemoscene, NEMOSEEN.com.
All right.
Nemoscene.com, NEMOSEEN.com. That's the company that does the distribution, and all the stuff is there. I don't need to say more.
All right, all right. That's wonderful. I wish you luck on all of that. And just one more item before we go to the phones, and that is Lucifer.
Yeah.
That came out of the left side on that one. Well, no, look, that was Ed Dames.
Oh, tell me the story. Yeah, you were going to tell me what happened to him.
And Ed Dames told me ahead of time he was going to remote view Lucifer.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
And he claimed that he found Lucifer as a legitimate and real entity and was a force so gigantic and so purely evil that, now this will get you, that at one point Ed said this entity recognized the fact that he was associating with it. And it scared the you-know-what out of them. And there are many people who feel, since that encounter, Ed Dames has never been quite the same. A fact he would deny adamantly. But there are many of us who think that it may have changed him in some way.
Well,
now, that's a pretty wild story.
Well, actually, it would. You know, I'm not. My only observations are these. How would you know whether you had encountered a thought form or an actual being? A thought form being a kind of archetypal force created by the focused, intended awareness of hundreds of thousands or millions of people. So how would you know whether you were dealing with a real being or simply the...
I don't know.
But either way, contacting that energy would definitely not be good for one's mental health.
Yeah.
I would agree with you.
Okay. All right.
I mean, whether it's an actual being or simply a collection of intentioned awareness,
maybe
either way, contacting something that's that negative cannot be good for you.
Maybe it doesn't matter which it is.
It doesn't make, functionally it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, that's right. All right, phone calls I have for you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hi.
Hi.
Hello, you're on a cell phone, aren't you?
Yes.
Where are you?
In Hampton Roads.
Hampton Roads. All right. Do you have a question for Stephen?
Yes, Stephen. I want to comment and ask your opinion on this man and dinosaur living contemporaneously.
Right.
You alluded to the fact that there was scientific evidence refuting that, but in Glen Rose, Texas, Dr. Carl Ball.
Yes, I'm familiar with this.
Yes.
Yes, he has found a footprint, a man's footprint within a dinosaur's footprint.
We know. I've had him on the air. I've interviewed him. Yeah, he believes firmly that they were on Earth together, and you know Dr. Ball, right? Or of his work.
I know the work. I know the work he's talking about.
And so I guess this caller then wanted to know your reaction to that. I mean, there they were, the footprints side by side.
I have two reactions. One is that particular body of material is so problematic. I mean, I have not personally seen it, and so I'm not altogether comfortable expressing an opinion. But from what I have read, that is all highly problematic evidence. And so I don't quite know what to make of it. I guess that's the best thing I can say is I don't know what to make of it. There is a possibility that some,
intervention.
Well, we know that there are creatures. There are certain kinds of fish, for instance, that date back to that period.
Well, Stephen, there is a problem in the regression, you know, when they put the skulls together and they're going back, you know.
Right.
Supposedly we evolved from apes, right? Well, there's a problem in that sequence, and there's a couple few holes they haven't quite filled in yet in that sequence to prove it absolutely. And there are people who have the view that there may have been an intervention of some kind.
Yes, Arthur Koestler thought that there had been an intervention.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he wrote in Janus, a book he wrote some years back, he argued that the greatest focus we should make on medical research was getting the high brain to talk to the mammalian and reptilian brains, and that this resulted because there was a manipulation and intervention. You know, it's possible. I mean, it is possible. There is no way to refute that. You can't prove a negative. So it is possible that that's true. Have we ever been contacted? It strikes me as awfully...
Are these...
Awfully... pompous to believe you're the only species in the universe.
Yes, well, that's a fairly well-expressed point of view, but as a remote viewer, can you actually go back and determine any of these questions? Is there a way?
Well, you could go back in time. Could you go back? You know, I never thought about that. Yes, you could go back to the moment of the Big Bang. Yes, you could.
Well, wouldn't that be a scenic trip?
I never thought about it.
Wouldn't that be scenic? The moment of the Big Bang.
I'm not sure whether you would get very useful information because somebody would say, well, it goes from infinitely small to... I'm just not sure how helpful what you would get would be, but
well, if you've got
it's doable.
If you've got some spare time, Stephen.
I might do that one.
Wild card line.
I might do that one. That's an interest. That interests me enough that
I'm
going to
radio
one at that.
Okay, wild card line. Hi there. You're
hey,
on
how
there.
Are you?
We're all right.
I'm 20 miles north of Florida line in Dothan, Alabama. We're in the projected path of the storm, possibly.
Wow.
Here she comes.
And I did have one comment about that. Had you considered that some of the greatest damage from this storm could be done to other parts of the country?
I've considered
Florida.
Hurricanes massive like this are terribly damaging. I've considered it, sure.
Well, my thought on that was that considering the Republican Party has a lot of wealth in it, I'm thinking that this storm will damage more Democrats in Florida and could affect the outcome of the election.
Man, I'll tell you, political season.
Yeah, crazy. Anyhow, my question for the doctor
Democrats.
Is, does he believe there's any connection between remote viewing and deja vu?
Yes. Are you all right? Good question.
Yes. That's a good question.
Uh-huh.
That's a very good question. I think déjà vu is is more than one thing. Sometimes I think it's a precognitive awareness. That is, the dream that you have on Tuesday is created and driven by the experience you're going to have on Wednesday, because the Wednesday experience is so numinous, so it's sufficiently powerful that it leaks back into your dream life of the previous day, so you have a precognitive dream, or you have a deja vu experience, that is, you have the sense that you've had this experience before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think deja vu is in a way, I hope I don't get misunderstood here, but it's kind of like dowsing. It's a kind of hand-waving word that may cover several different kinds of phenomena.
Well, here, I'll take you on a walk off the cliff on this one, buddy. We've had the experience. Well, this extends that question. We've had the experience on this program, a mass experience. I had hundreds of emails, Stephen, when it was suggested that, hey, you know, Nelson Mandela, a lot of people thought Nelson Mandela died. Oh, but he didn't. Nelson Mandela was released from prison, went on to lead his country.
Yeah, of course.
But millions of people, if it's suggested by hundreds of emails on a program like this, also thought Nelson Mandela died. It's like they had one memory fixed in their head about some weird alternate reality that either happened or almost happened, or that we were taken away from in another bubble in another universe or something. Yes. Uh-huh.
You mean you just started getting emails saying Nelson Mandela is dead?
Well, we had some caller who said Nelson Mandela is dead, right? And at the time, maybe I said, "Oh yeah, I think I heard that too," or something. And you know, somehow it began, and a lot of people had the same thought. And one possibility being considered about this mass, whatever it is, misthought, is that in some other reality it did work out that way and Nelson Mandela died, and a lot of people sort of vaguely remember that in some weird way in another timeline, if you're following me.
Absolutely. All I can tell you is in these things I favor Occam's razor. The simplest way is usually the best
solution. Well, what's the simplest solution to this? Why do that many people think that?
Well, I think it could be a pulse of fear that moves through the collective. You know, that's not the only time that's happened. I'm trying to think of the person, in fact, the entertainer. Oh, Bob Hope.
Yes.
From the Senate floor, they announced that he had died because somebody had heard that, and they started publishing obituaries on. This was several years before he died.
I think I recall.
You remember that?
Yeah,
I mean, I've forgotten what the name of which senator stood up, but he stood up and made this sort of eulogy for him, and then people began to report it, and of course he wasn't dead at all. You know, it's like Thurber? Mark Twain. Reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated
by millions of minds, maybe, Stephen. By millions of minds. All right. Was for our friends in Florida, who are indeed this morning riders on the storm. A lot of them hunched over in a deep, dark place within their house, listening to it all howl out there. It really is quite frightening. From the high desert in the middle of the darkness, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Riders on the storm.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed my guest, Stephen Schwartz, and it's always a pleasure to have a guest sufficiently of a resilient sort so that you can pummel them hard with questions and they come up with really good answers. Stephen is a remote viewer, and we've been hitting him with the hard ones. We're back to the phones in a moment. By the way, the eastern wall of the hurricane has still not yet cleared land. This is one slow-moving mother. Francis is really a slow mover, and that's not good in a hurricane situation. Once again, Stephen Schwartz, and by the way, in the material that you have available for people, how much do they deal with the subject of 2050?
Yes, one of the CDs is called 2050,
oh.
And it takes you through the experience.
Really? I didn't know that. That was a question in the blind, and so a whole CD, huh?
And then you can, it takes about 45 minutes.
All right.
An hour. It's an experience, and you can do it, and other people can do it, and then there's a form you can get that you fill in, and then you can share whatever your experience was. It has a common set of questions.
All right.
And then it gives you places where you can expand on those questions, sort of
all
like
right.
An essay. You can write little things.
All right. Back to the present. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hi.
Yes, hello, Art. This is Keith in Hamilton, Ontario.
Hey there.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Keith. I like Hamilton, and I like Ontario.
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah. I have a really weird question for you.
Sure.
I am a skeptic.
Good.
But here's a question and a request. If remote viewing is possible, as we are having this conversation right now, could you remote view me talking to you, and the next time you're on the show, you can describe me and my surroundings?
Okay, I'm not principally a remote viewer, Keith. I'm a researcher.
No,
I have
mean,
done
like
a lot of remote viewing, so yes, the answer is yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. My performance as a remote viewer, I would not let the whole issue stand or fall on that. If you are a skeptic, not that I'm not backing away from your thing, I'll do it. But if you're interested in looking at it, I really encourage you to look at a study that was done by Jessica Utz that's published in Statistical Science. In fact, if you send me an email, I will send you a list of papers that have been published in journals like Nature and IEEE, and that you may take a look at. That will answer your question.
Okay, can I ask another one?
Yeah, you may. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just wondering this infamous question of to remote viewers of, could you remote view the upcoming Powerball lottery, and win yourself millions of dollars?
Oh, that's such a very good one.
Actually, Keith, I personally did. I created that experiment. That's called associated remote viewing. And I created that experiment in August of 77. We did the first one off of the submarine, and then the next day did it to win a horse race.
All right, are you rich?
Am I rich?
Yeah.
No, we have made money out of it. It's much harder work than getting. The psychic is not a silver bullet. You can do it. Hal Putoff raised enough money to start a private school. Russ Targ did 9 straight silver calls to make, I've forgotten how many, $100,000. You can do this. People do it. I mean, it's not just a person.
All right, well, that's fair enough. So Russell Targ, you're saying, made 9, did I hear you correctly?
9 straight accurate silver calls.
And made a ton of money in silver.
And made a bunch of money. Hal Putoff used it to raise money for a private school for his kids.
Mm-hmm.
I used it to finance some research. It's not it's not effortless. It takes a lot of work to do these experiments. And in the end, I came away feeling that the reality is that successful traders are using anomalous perception to give them an edge. You know, there's a certain kind of guy. It's like oil well guys. If you talk to an oil engineer,
yes,
he will tell you right away what his percentage is. They put it on their business material, because people who are going to, you know, it's a crapshoot, and so you want a guy who's, everybody can get the same kind of intellectual information. I mean, that's relatively ready available. It's the interpretation part that makes the difference. And there are some guys who are very good at it, just like there are some archaeologists who are particularly good at finding things. And what they're doing is native remote viewing. That's what it is. I mean, that's what gives them the edge. Why two people looking at the same intellectual material, one of them can consistently produce a better result than another one.
But we have yet to see, you know, frequently on TV, they always show the winners of, my God, a taxi driver has won $56 million, right?
Right.
You see the guy saying, well, I'm not driving a taxi anymore. But we have yet to see someone stand up in front of the mics and say, well, yeah, hey, you know, I remote viewed the number.
Well, I know people who have gone to Las Vegas doing it. They don't want it generally known because they would be barred from the casinos.
Instantly.
And, but I mean, I know people that have done it and are doing it.
They don't like metal powers in casinos at all. I mean, even those that, I've never understood how you could bar a card counter. I mean, all they're doing is counting what's visually available and indelibly impressing it in their memory and then using it.
Right.
And that apparently change the odds just in favor of the gambler.
Just enough.
Which
That's
is
right.
absolutely not something the casinos allow.
No, they're into making money. Slot machines produce a fixed amount. They tweak them to make them produce a fixed amount of money a day. There's no gambling about it. If you get into, I once had occasion to acquaint myself with the slot machine industry for another purpose.
Mm.
And it was very clear that these machines produce a fixed amount of money every day, and they set it up that way. Each one of them is a computer that's hooked by a modem back to a war room, where they're watching each one of these things. They know exactly what they're doing.
There are laws, though. I mean, the Gaming Commission keeps them on their toes.
But they like the laws. They make more money. You know, it's like the same thing happened to Las Vegas that's happening in Russia now. The guys who may have started out bogus, they figured out that it was easier and cheaper and more profitable to be straight.
Yeah.
It's more profitable.
Oh, it's true that the Las Vegas has the management of Las Vegas at whatever level you imagine it to be managed has changed over the years.
Absolutely.
Changed hands. No question about that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Hello. I was listening to this, and he was talking about being in Vegas when I was in Reno. Somebody gave me a quarter because ordinarily I don't gamble. And so I just went over and put one in the machine. That machine opened up. I won that machine and wandered around and put it in. I had three machines.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, nothing. But at any event, my problem is I wanted to ask him, back before remote, that I'd heard about remote viewing, I started with a subject that I would put under hypnosis and regress to previous lives, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to get into, I guess what you would call, remote viewing. But I didn't know for sure how well she was doing this, so I put her off into, I wanted to find out, well, could she, really something that I knew existed somewhere, but she didn't. I knew damn well she didn't.
And so?
So I sent her up to Alaska. And I wanted her to cover the ground so high above Alaska. And when she spotted something that looked a little strange, to tell me about it. Well, she come up with what I was thinking about, and that was hop. So I told her to come down to the side of Hop, you know, outside the fence, describe it, and she described it 100%.
So you're saying
remote viewing.
So you've tested remote viewing. I wonder how many, I guess there are a lot of people who have followed that course, huh, Stephen? I mean, trying to prove it.
Most people, the reason remote viewing continues to grow is that just like this gentleman who called in,
yeah,
most people who try it, how whatever form they do it with, the first time have a sufficiently positive effect that it demonstrates its reality to them and they pursue it. That's why it's becoming, that's why I say it's like a modern mental martial art.
Well, you're certainly correct. I mean, it wouldn't be growing exponentially if there was nothing to it.
That's right. I mean, well, why would people do this? And what's interesting about it is that it has this, that the population who are interested in this of practitioners is about 50-50, male and female.
Are we going to have a future world, Stephen, where it is so refined and so many people are doing it that literally it does become the end of secrets?
I think, I've not asked that question to the 2050 viewers, but I would say based on what's going on, we're never going to get to a place where everybody does it because it takes a certain amount of discipline. And there is a lot of people that, you know, that just don't develop the discipline.
Right, but it wouldn't,
just not going to do it.
It wouldn't take everyone.
But I believe that not just remote viewing, but the whole idea that the consciousness of what I said earlier, there are two classes of phenomena. There's anomalous perception and anomalous perturbation. Everything comes under those two categories. And I think in the future, for instance, in the medical sciences, we're going to increasingly appreciate that the consciousness of the people who look after patients has an effect on their well-being over the long haul, and that it's a small effect, but it's sufficiently large that it makes a big financial difference. I mean, if you think about people who've been prayed for, these studies, these prayer studies.
Everybody wants an optimistic doctor, Stephen.
Oh, well, yes, not only that, but yeah, of course. But what I was going to say was that in these prayer studies, what it shows is that they have lower days of hospitalization. That's one of the universals.
Oh, this is so
across
true.
All the studies. Well, if you could eliminate and every patient who checked into a hospital, if you could eliminate one day in the hospital, think of the billions of dollars that would save.
You're right. It's a B with billions, yes, indeed. All right. First-time caller line. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please. All the way up. Okay. Now proceed.
I had more of a statement than a question.
Mm.
My statement was, you had made the comment about the CIA using. That would work, provided the general public never found out about this concept.
That's
right.
What happened.
Right.
Because if you remember when the Patriot Act came out, the amount of protest,
yes,
you'd have little granny down the street complaining that somebody's watching her.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And
that's a good comment.
Yes, it is, because I think that, you know, number one, it would be irresistible for the CIA not to use this, but they blew it wide open and said, well, we did, but we're not anymore. I don't know about that. I don't know if they are not anymore.
Everybody asks me this question.
Of course.
Is there some part of the government that's doing it? All I can tell you is that if they are, they are doing it on such deep background that none of us in the remote viewing community know about it. Because I know everybody in the community.
Well, they probably
in the research side of it anyway.
They wouldn't tell you guys.
No, but I mean, for instance, even when Russ and Hal were working at SRI, I mean, everybody knew that was a classified program. So you knew that there was something, you didn't know what it was exactly. I mean, you knew actually it was not hard to figure it out, but particularly you were doing research. I mean, they did exactly the same thing we did. They just did it with a different goal in
mind. Well, Stephen, what's bothering me here is, I might as well get to the bottom of it, if we're honestly not doing it, then I know damn well the Chinese are, probably the Russians are, and God knows how many other countries. And
I'm sure that there are people that are doing it. And in fact, I go further than that. I know that there are people that are doing it in various kinds of ways. I mean, that was what I was trying to say earlier. You know, remote viewing is a protocol for obtaining testable information from an anomalous source.
Right.
But the same thing is done. You know, studies have been done about CEOs and profit.
And the studies have shown that those CEOs who are better at doing precognitive tasks make more money than the CEOs who just do it chance.
Doesn't surprise me.
And much better than the CEOs who do below chance, whose businesses lose money. And the correlation is so strong that you can look at the balance sheet and predict how the guy is going to do or the woman's going to do.
That's why they pay them all the big bucks up
front. Of course.
Because they've got a track record. They've done it again and again and again and again.
That's exactly right. That is a form of remote viewing. So when you talk about remote viewing, you mean the protocol, that is a particular way of doing interviews and doing judging? That's what remote viewing originally meant. It was a protocol.
Would you
but
say
now it's a whole cover-all word for anomalous perception?
Then, like everything else in the world, Stephen, would you say that the successful remote viewers in America and the world,
yeah,
are the world's movers, shakers, rich people, and powerful people?
The people who are the best remote viewers, as a group, are accomplished people who have had successful careers in other fields and whose primary self-definition is not that they are remote viewers.
Oh, no.
If you had talked to Hella Hammond, for instance, who was one of the best, she would have said she was a fine arts photographer. If you had talked to Judith Orloff, who's been on your show, she would tell you she was a psychiatrist. If you talked to Michael Crichton, he would say to you, you know, I'm a writer-director. But all of those people are very good remote viewers. And my experience has been, and the remote viewers that I worked with, that I've had the best results with, were people who were confident, comfortable in their own skin. They had achieved some measure of professional and financial success, and they took this up either as part of a spiritual quest or as a desire to have a broader understanding of the outer limits of human function.
Well, then, by extension, Stephen, are the people out there with the psychic IQ of a brick generally
yes,
the poorest, most downtrodden, unlucky, unknown people in the world?
Well, you can train yourself to suppress psychic functioning. Engineers do it. Studies show, for instance, that engineering students have less creativity at the end of their educational process than at the beginning, based on measures of creativity.
It's beaten out of them, huh?
It's beaten out of them. It is, because you don't want people thinking. You don't want them thinking that way. So it is possible to suppress the ability. The ability itself is spread through the population about like any other
I mean, in a sense, the military does that to you. It teaches you to accept orders without question, without any thought process applied whatsoever. Very quickly, wild card line, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Got a quick question? Hello? Going once, twice. That was too quick. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Hello?
Yes, Stephen?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Stan in Tulsa.
Okay,
oh, Stan, how are you?
Okay, I have a quick question. I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
Real quick.
As a remote viewer, is there a connection between remote viewing and astral projection or out-of-body travel?
All right, good question.
Yes.
Is
That's
there?
That's a very good question. Boy, your question's been really good tonight.
And the answer?
And the answer is yes. They are both forms of anomalous perception. The difference is that an out-of-body experience is where the whole locus of your awareness moves outside of your physical body. And one of the components of that is that you turn around and see yourself, what's called otoscopy. And actual out-of-body experiences don't happen very often. But they must happen enough that there is a whole literature, and they appear in the pilgrimage stories of almost every spiritual path.
Well,
viewing is a much more... It's much more like daydreaming, and it's a way of touching the signal under normal circumstances with no trances, no drugs, no special equipment.
All right. Buddy,
no.
Listen, that's it. We're done. We're out of
All
time.
Right.
We
well,
got to
thank
go.
You,
Stephen, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
It's always fun to talk to you.
Later. Stephen Schwartz, Remote Viewing. I'm Art Bell. Take care. And especially in Florida, take care. It's just pounding away down there. From the high deserts, I'm Art Bell. Good night all. See you tomorrow night. See-